Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey guys, new podcast this week. It's Wednesday. It's actually probably Tuesday when I release this, but I don't know what day it is that you're listening to this. Sorry, I got to turn Viceland down. I'm obsessed with Viceland. We talk about that a little bit on today's podcast. We also, and I only doing this as a disclaimer, I also shit a tad bit on a guy I like, Casey Neistat. I don't shit on him totally. But I don't want it to be construed that I dislike him or that I'm trying to start beef. I'm not at all. I'm talking about narcissism in media and how the whole point we were talking about originally was Snapchat. Woo. I'm blowing the fuck up. Snapchat and Twitter and selfies and how vlogging is somewhat of one huge selfie. I do have this Stanhope. Fuck, it's my manager. Hold on. Hello.
Hey, Bird Eye Branch.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I'll pick this up as soon as I get done. Hold. All right, that's it. That was just my manager. We were talking about date offers and a pilot I'm working on, and he liked the script. So, but anyway, that was it. I don't mean to shit on Casey Neistat if he does hear this. And he gets upset. I can't imagine that he's listening to this, because I've asked him to be on my podcast a number of times. And I think he's just too busy. But, yeah. So if I talk negatively about anybody, you realize it's just a conversation of two people talking, and sometimes you can forget the mics are on. And I admire what Casey Neistat's doing. But whatever I say is whatever I say. Fuck it, dude. Fuck it. Dates? Go to BurtBurtBurt.com. I know I'm in... I talk about this on the show, but I'm in... Des Moines right now. No, I'm in Virginia Beach right now. If you're listening to this right now, I'm in Virginia Beach. Then I'm in Des Moines. Then I'm in Calgary. Then I might be in Appleton, Wisconsin. I'm not certain. That was what the phone call was about. We're trying to figure out if that's going to work. And go to BurtBurtBurt.com. You can see all my tour dates. Special went fantastic. So I will talk about that a tad bit to Steve that you're about to listen to. Especially went fantastic. Thank you, everyone that came out. I was a benchmark in my career, one of my favorite nights of my life, and thank you so much for all your support. Thank you, everyone who sent me really nice messages the day of and the day before the special telling me I have a great set. That means a lot. I didn't reply to many of them, but I definitely read them, and they definitely registered, and I definitely thought about them. So, that's it. By the way, I had a great conversation with Kurt. Metzger today. He called me out of the blue and wanted to fucking shit on. I was just fucking great. It was so fucking awesome. I love that guy. And Kurt, I love you. He said it to me and I say it back. All right. Today's podcast. This guy, you might know him from the Sarah Silverman program. He was on there. That's where I first got introduced to him. He was one of the biggest guys on Twitter until he deleted his account. And he talks about this on the podcast today. And I saw him do stand up at the comedy. That's how we'll start out right away. Is with a huge compliment because I saw him at the Comedy Store. And let me tell you something. If this guy is in your neighborhood, fucking go see him do stand-up. He is so fucking funny. He really genuinely is. And thank you, Brian Redban, for introducing the two of us. Because he's friends with Brian and they did a podcast. And I was happy to do the podcast. And we got to hang out. And from there, we've kept in touch. And so I finally got him on my podcast. And I'm going to have him back on because he's that fucking funny. And he's real. He is real as fuck. Ah, God, I love this guy. Ladies and gentlemen, today's podcast, Steve Agee.
This is the podcast.
Here, grab that mic, talk into it.
Yo, yo, yo.
Perfect, perfect. I'm hot.
Testing.
Perfect. It's so funny. At six, this is almost low, and at seven, it's blown out.
Yeah, I have the same one.
Really? I got to start. I'm going to start off with the, I've been thinking about this all day. The right way to word this.
Yeah.
It's this is a compliment, but it's gonna. But I'm so bad at compliments. Sometimes they come out fucking. They come out.
Lay it on me.
They come out bad.
I get it. I'm the
so
same way.
So the first time I ever heard of you was through Twitter.
Yeah.
It was through Twitter. I think you had like 2 million followers or something.
I had a million.
Million. And then I saw you on Sarah Silverman's show.
Yeah.
And I was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, I'd never seen you on around. It's... And you know how you, in a weird way, there's people that show up in this business like, people who show up in this business and are actors or get booked, and
yeah.
you're like, no, I'm well. Like, Rob, what's the guy that's really big on Twitter?
Delaney.
Rob Delaney.
Yeah.
And you're like, I've never seen him do stand up.
Yeah.
And so in a weird way, until you see them do stand up, you don't really have a frame of reference for how talented you believe them
yeah.
to be. I had that for you for the longest time. I've known you, but and I know yeah. that I connected with you. I like listened to you on podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
We have a lot of the same issues.
And I think we met at the Ice House.
At the Ice House, and I was super excited to see you because yeah. I heard you talk about anxiety one time, yeah. and it was like fucking groundbreaking. It was literally groundbreaking for me because I was like, oh, fuck, I got that exact same shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I saw you do stand up at the fucking Comedy Store, and I got to be dead honest with
you. Oh, no shit.
You might be the funniest person I've ever seen live.
That's a great compliment. I don't know how that I would take that
because, it comes out backhanded because
no.
because and I'll say this very candidly, but there's a lot of people in the alt community that can't
yeah.
do stand up.
Yeah.
That they can definitely do UCB and they can do
yeah.
Nerdist Meltdown and
yeah.
they can frame their jokes in a rhythm with verbiage that connects with those
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
But when they do like a legit I don't know anyone
club,
in this room
yeah.
audience, they aren't destructive. Dude, you fucking I mean, I'm telling you
I'll tell you what, I'm terrified of the Comedy Store. That's one place that for some reason I'm like I'm always nervous. Always fucking nervous.
Oh, me too. Me too. I've never enjoyed the
There's
place.
There's a weird stigma with that place because in the back of your head I'm always like, oh, you know, people get shot here.
Yeah.
It's like I just associate it with like a violent world. And it's just kind of still has that seedy vibe to it, which is awesome, but also terrifying.
It's terrifying, especially, and I find a lot of connections between me and you that you probably don't know yet, but like,
yeah.
I think we're both very sensitive men.
Yes.
I think
we're
like extremely sensitive to everything. I often say I have an acute sense of picking out the futility of it all.
Yeah.
Like I can see sadness.
Oh,
sometimes
boy.
Walking through the grocery store and it fucking breaks my heart. Like
sadness in the grocery store.
I always imagine from listening to you on podcasts that we're similar in that sense. And so when I saw you at the Comedy Store, I was like, oh, how cool that you're here. I know you're friends with Red Band.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is how cool. And I went over on the side. There's me. I want to say maybe Jesse May Peluso.
Uh-huh.
Chris D'Elia. Maybe.
Yeah.
We all just went to
it
watch
was one
it.
Of those secret shows.
And it was
yeah.
fucking you. I'm telling you when I say this,
oh,
and
thanks.
I'm saying this out loud, and I've very seldomly said this on my podcast. if you were in a city, I would fucking be tweeting about you being there so my fans could go there
would. I should do the road.
You could fucking destroy the road.
Really? I'm
Dude.
So fucking terrified
of
Tori. Oh,
my God. You would destroy the road. You do not speak from a, you speak from a level of empathy. You speak empathetically on
yeah.
stage, and you it's all about you. It's
yeah.
not pain. You're not mocking someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the comedy I absolutely love. I got to be honest with you. I haven't laughed out loud watching comedy.
Wow,
very
thanks,
few
man.
Times. I mean,
thanks.
I'll sit back and even like Burr, who I think is genius.
Oh,
I'll
yeah.
sit back and I'll smile a lot, and then
yeah.
he'll get me a good gut laugh once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I smile like, wow, good fucking writing. Like
yeah,
holy
yeah.
shit, man, that
yeah,
was
he's
there.
Awesome.
But man, you had me laughing beginning to end.
Holy shit!
Because you also have this amazing stage presence that isn't forced. It is who you are. You are who you are on stage and off stage.
Yeah.
And I love that in a performer. And
oh,
I was
thanks.
Like, I gotta be honest with you, I came home and I was like, I'm now Googling the fuck out of him.
Yeah, it took forever. I only feel like I just got comfortable doing stand up like within the past few years.
Really?
Like, I was always I started doing it when I was like 18 years old. Just because when I was a kid, I would listen to Dr. Demento, and he turned me, you know, he would play clips of, you know, not just music, but stand up on his show. And that's where I first heard George Carlin when I was like 10 years old or 11 years
old.
How
old are you?
I'm 47. I just turned 47. And so like when I was 11, I think I've said this before, but like all my friends, that's like when, you know, you're influenced by your friends and you start buying music that they buy. And like all my friends were buying, you know, albums like music, and like I was buying comedy albums at like 11. Like I think the first album I ever bought was George Carlin, Place for My Stuff, and like just I couldn't get enough comedy. But I came from a family and a world where no one was in entertainment. I didn't think it was something you could actually do.
Where'd you grow up?
Riverside, just an hour east of
Oh, really?
LA.
So you're from LA?
Kind of. And so I was just like, I didn't know that was something you could do. And then I think it was my mom that was, she showed me like a clipping in like the LA Weekly or something. She's like, look, they have like an open mic for stand up. And I did it, and luckily it went well my first time. Cause I feel like if I had bombed my first time doing stand up, I probably never would have done it again. That's the type of person I am. I'm like, I realize when something goes bad. I'm not one of those delusional people. I'm not either. That went well. I'm like, if it fucking was horrible, I would have been like, okay, what can I try now? But it went well. Then it started going bad, but I was like, I know it's there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're just chasing that first time.
What year is this? This was
like 89 or
so. The club options were not, there was not like a,
there weren't a lot. And this was at a, in Montclair, which I don't think is, it's even there anymore. There was a comedy club called The Laugh Stop. And that's where I did it. And they're like, hey, that was great. Come back and do it again. And, so that's where I'd go. And then I started going, I saw in the LA Weekly, you know, like an open mic. It wasn't really an open mic. You had to audition for it, but it was at the Ice House in the Annex. And, this guy, Dave McNary, ran it, who I think still does stuff there. And, so I went and auditioned, and you could just do shows there like once. I would do shows there once a month. And, but nothing ever came out of it. I didn't know how to keep, I didn't realize the concept of other comedy clubs. So I was just like, oh, let's do this once a month. And then it just kind of petered out, and I just started playing in bands. And I was like, oh, this is, I get easily engulfed in new shit. Like, when I started playing in bands, I was like, this is what I want to do. And then, you know, I was moved to LA with a band, and then...
What kind of music?
It was like punk. And yeah. Then we kind of broke up, and everyone moved back to, you know, back to Riverside. And I was the only one that stayed in LA. And I started dating this girl who was taking classes at the Groundlings. And I went to a show with her, and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I loved comedy. I'm going to do that again. But maybe I'll do improv and sketch, and I want to be on S because I'd always wanted to be on SNL. And so that's how I got back into doing comedy. And I was just never like, stand up was never natural for me. I was bad at writing. I thought, to me, comedy, there was just one kind where you write a setup and then a punchline. And I was like, that's, and I was bad at that. My jokes were so fucking hacky and goofy. And even while Sarah's show was going on, I was not happy doing stand up because I just felt like a sham. I was like, these are horrible jokes, but I'm allowed to go into a club and do them because I'm on the Sarah Silverman show. Like, doors would open and I'd be like, well, I'd be a fool not to do this.
Yeah.
But I felt horrible. And then it was when I, like in 2010 or 11, I mean, it was very recent. I met Janine Garofalo. She was out here shooting 24.
I fucking am obsessed with Janine
Garofalo. I am too. I loved her, and I met her backstage at Largo, and we immediately hit it off and were hanging out a bunch while she lived out here. And I remember one night, I was just like, we were talking about stand-up, and I was just like, I don't know. I don't like the jokes I do. I don't think I write good jokes. And she would just totally open my eyes. She's like, so don't write jokes. She's like, just fucking talk about shit in your life. It doesn't have to be observational. You talk about, you know, what's bothering you, you know, And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And then I just started talking about, you know, all the shit in my life. And it fucking made it so much more enjoyable.
Oh, dude, I can't. I hope you, by the way, this is my gardener, Gabriel. He may get done blowing and then decide to come in.
I rang your doorbell and he was just like, he's not there. He's in the back.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, this is my first time here. I don't know. I feel weird walking in the back. He's like, he's in the back. He's like, go into the back. And then before we started, there was this horrible knot in my shoe, and my shoe was untied. And he's like, your shoe's untied. I'm like, yeah, I know my fucking shoe's untied, dude. Everyone tells me my shoe's untied.
He has a bug for the podcasting, so you'll see. He'll knock and want to come in. And
that's funny.
And then tell you a story about something. He's a very sweet guy, but he often brings stuff and tries to sell it.
Does he ever let you use the leaf blower?
No.
I've always wanted to try one.
He should let his wife use the leaf blower. His poor wife does all the fucking manual labor, and he just goes around and blows around the leaves.
Yeah, look, she's like carrying all
this
shit.
She's doing everything. She does everything. He brought his kids out here one time, and I felt like I felt horrible. I felt like, I was like, I can't have your kids doing my lawn. I'll do my lawn. Never mind. I'll do my lawn. I'll pay you. You guys relax.
I'm so jealous that you have a house. It's all I think about.
It's my wife. I would never have had a house. I would have never had a house. I would have stayed in our apartment forever. I would have no interest in. I had no interest in owning a home.
You didn't. It's all I want.
Really?
I'm so sick. I've lived in the same apartment for like a long time, and
Why don't you just go on the road, make fucking $500,000? No, I'm being dead serious.
No, I know you are. The other thing is, I don't do the road. I'm afraid of doing the road. I don't know why. Part of it is my depression.
Yeah.
The
road will definitely fucking squeeze out.
Exactly. I don't like the idea of being in, like, I'd be fine in Portland, in San Francisco, in Austin or New York.
Yeah.
Great. Chicago. Sure. But it's the towns like, hey, come to Peoria for 4 days. And I'm just like, I think I would.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm built for the road. I feel like I would kill myself. And I'm not
there's ways to finagle the road to make it really enjoyable.
Yeah.
I think if you did what a lot of guys go out and do one-nighters. Those are really fun.
Yeah.
You can't make a ton of money that way. I mean, you really can make good money doing a weekend.
Yeah.
But I'd argue you could probably make the same amount of money doing one-nighters and just doing door deals at rock venues, and then pair up with another guy you like and go out together.
That's what it is. I love doing shows with my friends. I'm going to be in San Francisco the 13th of this month at the Punchline with John Doerr.
I was like,
I'm just featuring for him. I'm not going to make any money. I'm paying to get myself there, but for some reason, I love going to do shows with my friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I'll go to fucking Houston and do a show with you. But I don't do it a lot because I'm not going to make any money.
I can't express this enough. I hope that you get the experience I got watching you. It was that much fun,
man.
It was, and I'll be very. He's playing with the softball. You see that?
Oh yeah! Holy shit!
He's doing tricks for us right now. He wants to get on the fucking.
He's
podcast.
Doing the thing where he holds the hose for the leaf floor straight up and down, and he's got a softball hovering.
Yeah, he's doing it for us now.
He's performing. He's the Tiger Woods of leaf blowing. Look at that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
An orange. Do an orange. You're like, fuck you. We eat those, motherfucker.
He's looking for a fucking orange now.
Should I go reach an orange for him?
Oh, what if it goes into
it's going to clog up his...
It's going to clog up his thing and explodes on his back.
Wow. No, he's just looking for an excuse to steal your oranges.
So, but what was I just about to say before Gabriel started?
Fuck Gabriel.
God damn it, Gabriel. But no, but like it, you, the road is doable. It does fuck with depression. It does. I don't have depression, but I probably have like whatever low grade depression people probably regularly get.
Yeah, I think there's a normal amount of depression in everybody.
Yeah, and I get that, and the road definitely exacerbates that. But there is a way to do the road where you go in, especially if you can fly in Thursday morning, do Thursday night, press Friday, two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, and bail Sunday morning.
Yeah,
that's not that bad. Small towns, you end up kind of falling in love with the small towns.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because you end up going there a lot. So like, I'm going to Des Moines in. I'm in Virginia Beach this weekend, Des Moines next weekend, Calgary the weekend after that. I've never been to Calgary, so that'll be depressing. So I'm like, I'll have to figure out the city. But once you've gone there a couple times, you're like, oh, I got people that'll come to Des Moines that come see me and I hang out with.
Yeah.
And like usually I'll do like some sort of 5K. Not usually, but I have done 5Ks in cities.
Holy shit.
That'll get you out of that. That'll just get you out of the apartment. I'm going to a wine mixer in Virginia Beach with some fans.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
Hey, you want to do this? That makes it more fun. I drink a lot on the road. That fucks with me.
Yeah, I don't drink.
You don't drink?
No. I stopped like 4 years ago because I would get sick every single time maybe I have an allergy, but like, and I wasn't even a big drinker. I would just socially drink. But if I went to a party the last time I drank and I had one beer and the next day I felt so sick.
Yeah.
And I was like, why do I even bother? I'm not drinking to get drunk at these parties even. Why am I even socially drinking? And so I just stopped.
Yeah.
I still smoke pot.
Yeah, I haven't been drinking lately. That's just because I got very introspective, I guess.
Yeah.
As to what am I here for in this world? Like, why am I here?
Yeah.
I really have been phoning everything in for fucking 42 years.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
But I haven't been working very hard. I've been doing what I love.
Yeah.
And I work hard at it, I guess, but I don't work as hard as I could.
Didn't you just record a special?
I just did a special. And so right before that, it was fantastic.
Awesome.
I mean, can I tell you something? By the way, this is going to dial in, I think, a similarity we have. Candidly, between me and you, if I wasn't doing this and that we were like best friends, I tell you, dude, it was the greatest thing I've ever done. I worked really hard.
Yeah.
And I think, I got to be honest with you, I did like an hour 20. Mm-hmm. So out of that, and I did two shows, I think I had on both shows, there were probably like nines. They were fucking fantastic.
Awesome.
And so you edit between the two of those, you got a home run 10. I'm very proud of it. Now, the way I really am in life, I would never say that.
Yeah.
I'm so embarrassed to say that.
Yeah.
I say that to you to prove something
way.
About what I feel is social media, and you deleted your Twitter account.
Yes.
But that's how...
That was dumb.
But I fucking want to delete mine. I'm like, it's we're in this world of narcissism begets art. Like, so our biggest social media people are technically now our biggest artists are just simply the most narcissistic people.
Oh,
and that is who leads the charge.
So out of control, dude. I've really been like in my own head and so fucking like really fucking questioning social media lately. Like fucking now Snapchat,
dude.
Snapchat has fucking made me want to almost delete every social media.
Snapchat, Snapchat shows you how the most interesting people in comedy are the saddest human beings alive. I'm telling you when I say this, and I will not say names, but I will tell you, the most popular stand-up comedians are by themselves all the fucking time.
I didn't even think of it that way.
They don't have any friends. They don't have any friends. And you realize that as they were tweeting, and they were funny in Twitter, and as they were Instagramming cool pictures, yeah, that's great. But when Snapchat is watching me type in my tweets, and that is me alone, and I'm watching these people, and
it's opening the curtain and revealing.
Dude, it breaks my heart. Like, I literally called someone yesterday and said, hey, would you like to go for a hike or something? because I know the guy is just, he's just sad. It's just, there's no way you can be happy in that life.
I never even thought of it that way. That makes perfect sense. To me, it's all I see when I look at Snapchat. Like, every single person's I look at, I'm like, narcissist, narcissist, narcissist. All their cameras are on rear or front facing. So everyone's Snapchat is just them.
Yeah.
And it is just them sitting in their car.
Sitting in their car.
Coffee.
And why is it that the cars look all European? Every time someone's driving in Snapchat, it looks like the driver, the steering wheel's
fine
on the other
leather.
Side.
Yeah. It's just me. Here's a picture of me. And then, and it's bleeding over into like Instagram where like, they've got those weird filters that put weird like dog ears and shit on you. And so now people are screen grabbing or saving those and putting them on Instagram. And I'm just like, it is so fucking out of control.
It really is. And it's my downward spiral started with vlogs. So I got obsessed with this guy, Casey Neistat's vlog, and then very quickly realized, oh, this is propaganda. This is almost identical to what Hitler did. Like, really very close. They're very close cousins.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I got a dog, huh? Like, have you ever seen his videos of him up at his house?
No.
Oh, I've watched everything there is to know about Hitler. Hitler had a dog, right?
Yeah.
So it was propaganda that backfired. He wanted to show the human side of himself.
No.
So he goes
shit.
Up to his mountain house, and he has all his generals with him. Ava's with him. And the dog
eagle's
comes
nest.
The eagle's nest.
Yeah.
And the dog comes over, German Shepherd, obviously.
of course.
Comes over and Hitler goes to pet him, but the dog goes and like freaks.
No.
Yeah, because clearly Hitler's not a good pet owner.
He beats his fucking dog.
Of course he beats his fucking dog. So it backfired. And then I started watching Casey Neistat. Casey Neistat has a fantastic vlog.
He's also the Hitler of dogs.
I'd tell everyone to watch it. However, after a while you start realizing what is the equivalent of the dog quiver of his propaganda machine getting out of control.
Yeah.
And it's fine, dude. It's not made for me. I'm 43 years old. It's made for children. That's why he doesn't curse in it and he bleeps out curses.
Yeah.
It's made for children. That's who's watching YouTube.
Yeah.
I got into vlogging because of Casey Neistat and this guy, Mr. Ben Brown. Mr.
Yeah.
Ben Brown's is more of an artistic vlog. Casey's is more of an ego-driven, like, I sit first class, I have nice cars, I have a nice house, I have a really cool office, look at this, I got this present, I just throw it around. Like, it's really narcissistic. It's a little hard for me to watch now because I've watched so many of them, I can't watch it. But that is where I started noticing the narcissism, really noticing it.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it in tweets.
Yeah.
Like, Humble Brag was brilliant. It really was brilliant.
Yeah, that was great.
Because I didn't catch those.
I never did either until Harris started that account and started pointing that shit out. And I'm like, fuck, I'm guilty of that sometimes.
Oh, I'm so guilty of it.
It's so early. I'm in my trail. I'm like, yeah, I'm announcing that I'm on a set working on a TV show.
Yeah, and I never realized it until he pointed it out. That's a miss. I wish that guy was still alive.
I do too.
I think I met him before. I definitely met him in Houston, but I never got to hang out with him.
Yeah,
I just think I watched his improv group in Houston. But I started noticing it there, and then I started noticing a long time ago on Instagram. I stopped putting pictures of myself doing cool shit because I was like, I don't think anyone wants to see this shit. And then I got onto Snapchat. At first, I was pretty fascinated by it, and then I was like, "Oh, this is heartbreaking.
It's crazy.
Like, I can't watch it now. Like, I follow this one girl, Albie is her name.
Uh-huh.
She's basically just a whore. I mean, really, honestly. And if she isn't, then she needs to change the way she represents herself on Snapchat.
Yeah,
because it's basically her smoking blunts, covered in tattoos, and everything is a picture of her tits, her ass. And her like biting her bottom lip and I just was sitting there like, I gotta unfollow you only because I think you're sucking away parts of my good serotonin.
Yes. Like some of the porn stars that I follow on Snapchat, I'm like, they're not even posting nude photos.
Yeah.
Like, why am I this? You're doing shit that every other girl on Snapchat is doing.
Yeah, no offense. The reason I follow you is because you have drool hanging from a dick to your mouth. I don't follow you to see you hanging out in a pool with some fucking DJ in Miami.
I don't care what you had for lunch.
I don't care what you had. Unless it's cock. Fucking.
Yeah.
That is so fucking true. Snapchat was like, I think was the rope's end for me.
Yeah, it was the biggest eye-opening, like, oh, we have a problem with social media. You know, it's – and I tweeted – I think I tweeted – I may have Snapchatted it as well, but I tweeted it also because that Snapchat shit disappears after, like, 24 hours. But, like, I was like, I'm so sick of watching everybody just post fucking photos and videos of themselves. I was like, there are people I'm friends with who I follow on there who are like, you know, you have that story thing on Snapchat yeah. where, and I'll click on their name to see their Snapchat, and then I just keep clicking, and it's like 60 Snapchats of them in their car fixing their hair, and I was like, this is fucking crazy. And then I started getting like text messages from girls, not even just girls, but guys too, going, were you talking about me? And I'm like, actually, I wasn't, but if the fucking shoe fits,
yeah,
I'm actually talking about everybody.
That's the truth is that I love when I get a text message and it's a dick. I gotta be honest with you. I get excited. I'm like, finally, man, this is what it was meant for.
Yeah.
I mean, this will tell you how when I signed up for Snapchat, that was when it was dick pics.
That's it, yeah.
And my handle was Romeo Horsecock because I was like, that'll get some dick pics. And now that it's turned into a legit social media thing, I'm like, I feel silly that my handle is Romeo Horsecock.
Romeo Horse. It is the worst. It's the worst social networking app that's come out yet.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few people I think that are actually fun to you like watch. Like there's some people that I met on TripFlip on my show on Travel Channel that mm-hmm. I watch their Snapchat, and they're actually, it's all about their family and their kids. So it's cool for me
yeah.
to look at it and go, oh, it's cool, your kids are growing up. That's yeah. cool. There's a couple of female comedians that I don't mind that if there's a selfie, there's drawn stuff on it, and it's promoting their shows, which is fine. But man, for the most part, my heart was breaking watching some guys. I was like, guys, man, like you are the fucking prototype for like why you end up getting married and have a family, because that is what sits out there. What was the takeoff for you for Twitter? How did you get so big on Twitter?
I started early in Twitter, and then I think Sarah's show was still on the air when Twitter was going. And so I had been on it for a while, and I had like 2,000 followers. And then Sarah joined, and in one night, she had 5,000 followers. And I was like, God damn it, I've been on here for like almost a year, and I have 2,000. Granted, she's Sarah Silverman, but yeah. I was still like, fuck, I've been here for forever. And so this was a Monday, and I was like, I'm going to do like this weird thing. So I tweeted, if I get 5,000 followers by Friday or by Saturday, no, by Friday, I'll read all their names in a video. Like I'll just sit in front of, you know, Cam Chat or whatever it was at the time, and I'll just go through and I'll read every single person's name. And I sent that tweet out, and I started getting a few followers, not many. And then my friend texted me. He's like, dude, I just did some math. And he's like, if you get 5,000 followers, that's going to take you like 4 hours. And then I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. And so I just didn't mention it again. I didn't retweet it. I was like, I'm just going to let this go. And then somehow Rainn Wilson saw it, and he retweeted it. And my numbers started fucking really going up, and I was getting really scared. And then that Friday, my last day, people had till midnight Friday night. That last fucking day, Oprah did a show about Twitter.
Oh, shit.
Oh, and after Rainn Wilson retweeted me, I think somebody at Twitter put me on a list where when you used to sign up for Twitter,
it would suggest who to use.
Suggest who to use. And if you didn't unselect those, you were just automatically following them. So dumb people would just not do that. Or people who are not dumb, but just weren't getting it, would just automatically be following.
The people that are not tech savvy.
Exactly. They would just automatically be following me. So I was getting a lot of followers that way now. And then fucking that Friday, Oprah did a show about Twitter. She had Ashton Kutcher on and Jimmy Fallon, and she signed up for a Twitter account.
Oh, my God.
And as soon as she signed up for a Twitter account, every housewife in America started signing up for Twitter. And were just automatically following. My numbers went up so fucking high in one day that I had to just, like halfway through Friday, I just put my account on lock. Like you couldn't follow me unless I approved it. Because I was like, this is out of control. I can't read this many names tomorrow. And also half these people who are now following don't even realize that I'm going to be reading names. And so I think I got up to like 8,000 followers or something. by midnight. And so the next day, all day, it took me like 6 hours. I just sat there and read.
Are you serious?
I did it, yeah. And then, but then from that point on, I was getting like 1,000 followers a day, every fucking day, and sometimes more. And then, you know, it wasn't long before I had like 1,100,000 followers, but like a lot of them didn't know who I was. A lot of them were spam bots. And the people who I didn't know or who didn't know me, I would get like probably anywhere from 10 to 50 tweets a day at me going, "Who the fuck are you? You're not fucking funny. Why am I fucking following?"
Oh, that's fucking
just really angry, like aggressive. And I have done nothing to these people. And they're just like, "Who the fuck are you?" And so I would just...
Gabriel, come here for a sec.
So I just deleted it.
And you, how many did you have when you deleted it?
1,100,000.
Gabriel, this is my buddy Steve.
Hi,
Steve,
Gabriel.
This is Gabriel.
How are you?
Oh, how are you?
That was great what you were doing with
yeah,
the...
you can do this in your show.
Oh, here. Yeah, yeah.
It's an audio show.
Talking to the microphone. Tell them what you were doing.
Okay, I'm the gardener here for Mr. Albert for 20 years.
20 years?
Yeah, 20 years, yeah.
See, okay.
20 years or 25, right?
25.
I know this house for 25 years.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know Mr. What's his name? Yeah.
He's worked this house for 25 years.
Oh, wow.
Long, long time. I know this orange tree was little. Now it's big tree.
Wow.
Yeah. So time passed too fast, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
So he's your friend or your...
Yes.
Partner? Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Businessman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Business friend.
Oh, he's a comedian.
Yeah. Oh, comedian?
Yeah.
Oh, give me your signature.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Is famous or not famous?
No, no, no.
Very famous?
Yeah. Yeah. No, not
like
enough.
Like a Charlie Chaplin?
Not that big.
You know Charlie Chaplin was a Mexican. He born in Mexico City, but...
No,
they, no, is that true?
One, they took to Europe, and then he came to United States.
They kidnapped him and took him to Europe?
Yeah, yeah. In Mexico, Michoacán, Mexico.
No,
yeah,
not true.
Yeah, right.
No.
Yeah, right.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'll look it up.
Serious. Okay. Yeah. He born over there, and you never hear about this his story like Hitler. Hitler born in Argentina, and then they took to Europe, and then when almost he passed away, they took returned to Argentina. He passed away in Argentina.
Hitler?
Yeah, Hitler.
Really?
Yeah, so it's, yeah, okay, so I'm finished with the show here with the orange. You can put this and blow like that.
That's great.
And then...
that look cool.
What are you doing with your flamingos? You selling or...
No, we're leaving them. The girls love them.
Yeah, they growing. They growing.
There's a lot of flamingos out there.
It was a prank.
Really?
Someone did it to us and the girls loved it, and so the bath fire.
Yeah, I put water and I give feed the grass. I put... So they growing.
Oh, perfect, perfect.
It's
awesome.
Cuban flamingos.
Yeah.
You never been in flamingos?
I have. I've been to Florida.
Casino? No.
Oh, in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice and beautiful, but
yeah.
When I don't like is when you gambling, you have no money in your pocket, so
that's the worst.
Yeah, yeah, it's right.
When you lose all your money.
So you have any eggs for sale now?
No, we're eating them. We get we should have gotten another chicken. We're only getting like 3 eggs every 2 days.
Three. Oh.
So we're eating them. Like, we eat them before.
Yeah.
Before.
So what, maybe I bring a boyfriend for them.
No.
So
get
a baby. Oh, that would be so loud. Boyfriend. You won't sleep.
Yeah. No?
No. No, we don't want any more.
You want no more babies?
No more babies.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I should bring my princess, my rabbit. It's a white like this big one. So she play with the chickens.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Princess, and the coca. Coca get lost the last of the year. Somebody steal it.
Oh, really?
Coca is a rabbit.
Great. Someone stole your rabbit?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Beautiful rabbits. It's,
sure a coyote didn't get it or something?
No, no.
Someone took it.
Somebody move across the street and they take it.
Is it in here?
No. No, I don't see nobody here.
The back, was the back open?
Yeah, I open.
Awesome.
I have my key here.
All right, brother. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Gabriel. Thank you for your interview. Nice to meet
great
you.
Great to meet you, Gabriel.
Open my book.
Oh, shit.
My book. I need my book.
Give him his book.
So I can read it. And,
Next time.
Okay.
Next time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Gabriel.
Okay.
I'm a mess right now.
Yeah, okay. So
all right, brother. Thank you. Thank you. I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Gabriel. He came in. I was doing a podcast with Luis J. Gomez, and he came in, and I left, and they talked for like fucking 20 minutes.
In Spanish?
No, Luis doesn't speak Spanish, but he started talking to Luis in Spanish because he assumed it, and Luis was like, I'm American. But I don't know about the Charlie Chaplin from Mexico thing, and Hitler born in Argentina. I don't believe that either.
I feel like that might be true with Hitler. I know a lot of the Nazis fled to...
No, but he wasn't born in Argentina.
I don't know. There's no way he could have been born in Argentina. But I know that's where a lot of the Nazis fled. Maybe that's where he's getting that.
Probably. So wait, let's get back to Twitter. So
I just deleted it because I was sick of just the constant negative shit.
How soon after you deleted it did you regret it?
Days. I was really into Twitter at the time, and I deleted it. And then, we'll give you the time frame when it happened. I went to a screening the premiere of Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, really?
And as soon as the movie was over, my first thought was, I wish I could tweet how cool I thought that movie was. And then, I said to someone, I was like, oh, I just want to tweet about how cool that movie was. And they're like, so just fucking make another Twitter account. I was like, all right. And so I did, and it's slowly getting back up.
How many do you have now?
I think like 120-something thousand.
I have like somewhere around there, and I don't think anyone – I think there are 2,000 people that read on my tweets.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And it's I think it's at a good number. I'm like totally fine with – where it is.
So how did you I hate to like divert this to two people that I'm fascinated with, but yeah. How did you meet Sarah, and then tell me about Janine?
I met Sarah after my stay at the Groundlings, because you know Groundlings is basically just classes. You take classes to learn improv and sketch writing. And
I wish I'd done that.
And then after you do all you do a class, and then you do a show, and then you do the next class in a show, and then you do these writer's lab where you write a sketch show. And then after that, they vote, and they're like, yeah, you've been here you've taken all four classes. We think you'd be a good, like, actual company member to do shows. And they voted me out. They were like, yeah, we think you're done.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Do that in Hollywood?
I know. The crazy thing was, that was my life for 5 years. I was so engulfed in the Groundlings. Like, I was working in the office to pay for classes. I would tape shows for people at night to pay for classes. And like, it's where I met all my fucking friends who like I still hang with. And I was just like
who, anyone that's working now that we know?
Yeah, Maya Rudolph and I were in classes together.
Maya Rudolph, is that I get Maya Rudolph confused with Quincy Jones is Rashida Jones.
That's Rashida. But Maya is
in The Bridesmaids?
Yeah.
Oh, she's fucking awesome.
She's great. And she's one of my best pals. I've known her. I mean, it's been like over 20 years now.
Really?
And, we were just kids together, you know? And I was at Groundlings, you know, who else was there when I was there? Will Forte, like all these people.
Will Forte, you know who's really talented? But I don't remember his name. I'm really bad at names, but the guy who was the other cop in Superbad.
Oh, Bill Hader?
Bill Hader is so fucking talented. Funny. Dude, like he might be someone that I go, I might be watching everything he ever does for the rest of his life.
Even like, shit that he's in that's not great, he's fucking great.
He's really I watched him the other day in Tropic Thunder. I watched Tropic Thunder with my daughters.
Oh my god. Dick swinging low.
He's so fucking good. So I'm sorry, keep going.
He's so good. So yeah, I was there at a really great time, you know, and I was there when Kristen Wiig was there. I was there when
she is fucking amazing.
Melissa McCarthy was there when I was
she
there.
She is fucking amazing.
Like some heavy hitters. And so when they pulled the rug out from under me and like they're like, well, you're done. I was like, wait, I've been here every day for 5 years. What am I supposed to do? Like, I woke up the day after they cut me, and I was like, I didn't know what the fuck to do. That's when I started going to therapy, because I got into such a deep depression. My girlfriend at the time was like, you have to see a therapist. You are, like, really low right now.
But that's like taking stand-up away from me. And maybe just a group of comics saying, hey, you're not good enough to do this. And I'm going, well, you don't know how good I can be.
Or even not good enough. But just, it would be like a bunch of comedians saying, you're not the right fit for us. And then you can't do comedy anymore. It was just weird. And then I had a buddy that...
And by the way, there are clubs that do that.
Oh, yeah,
In comedy, there are what do you say, like maybe four different clubs in the city, five different clubs in the city. And I know that there are definitely two that have told me, hey, you're not good enough to do stand-up here.
That's crazy.
And it's bizarre. But then you just write it off and go, well, I'll just do it at the other three. Yeah. But that's how it works for a lot of us.
I know.
I mean, I'm trying to think of a great, like, I can't think of a great example. Let's say, Howard Kremer, who I think is fucking amazingly talented.
Yeah.
But there are clubs that go, oh, you're not right for us. And you're like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
You're wrong about saying that. I'm not saying that happened.
But it's like the whole alt comedy thing versus straight stand up where it's.
Yeah. Like, and so
I think it can work in both places.
I think it can. I think funny is funny, but keep going. Yeah. And so.
So I had a buddy after that who he was doing a play here in Hollywood, and like 3 or 4 days before the play started, someone dropped out and they needed someone to fill in for this guy in the play, and they needed a guy who's funny, who could learn the lines, who could act, and who could also play guitar. And I'd been in bands and stuff, and so my friend recommended me. He's like, and the guy who wrote the play and was starring in the play was this guy, Dave Juskow, who's like a New York comedian.
You know Dave Juskow? Does he have a brother, too?
I don't know. But Dave had that show on like Comedy Central, or he was part of that show, TV Funhouse, with Robert Smigel, who was the puppets.
Yeah.
He's a really funny dude, and he wrote this really funny play. And so Dave was like, okay, sure, he can do it. And so I did this play, and the opening night, Sarah's like best friends with this guy going back to New York. And so she was at the opening night of the show. And afterwards she came up to me. She's like, hey, you were really funny. This was like, it's probably like 2000. God, this was either like 2000 or 99 that this happened in.
Holy shit.
And, so I was like, oh, thanks. And I was telling her, like, I don't like doing plays. Because I don't like doing live shit where I have to memorize.
For the record, Sarah was not who we know her to be today.
No, she had done... She'd been on SNL for a year and done a bunch of stand-up. And, you know, she showed up and, you know, guest starring and stuff.
Yeah.
But she wasn't the big star that she is now.
She probably done What About Mary?
Yeah, she had done What About Mary. And so I was telling her, I was like, I don't like doing plays. I'm afraid I'm going to forget my lines. You know, it's not like TV or commercial where if you forget, you can just cut and do it again. So I really do. I hate doing live shit like that because I have a really horrible memory. And I was like, so I get panic attacks. And I started telling her about panic attacks. And that's what we bonded over.
Yeah.
She was like, dude, I used to get the worst panic attacks. And we smoked a joint. We sat out front of that theater like for hours just talking. And then literally hung out every day for like years after that. Like we were total buds. And so she wrote a part for me in her Comedy Central show.
Really?
That goes back to you know, not knowing who I was until you saw me on Sarah's show. I hadn't done anything. In fact, when Sarah wrote the show, she was like, you know, I'm going to have Brian Posehn and Steve Agee. They're like, whoa, whoa, who's Steve Agee? She's like, he's my friend and he's really funny. And they're like, we don't know who he is. Let's get somebody else, someone with a name. And she's like, no, I wrote this for Steve. And they're like, we don't know who he is. And so Sarah called me and she's like, you have to put a tape together. And another thing we bonded over, I used to make dumb short videos, little dumb videos, just out of boredom. And Sarah thought they were funny. She's like, just put all that shit on a tape. Like I had one called Cry Baby, where it's literally just a video of me walking around the house naked crying. And and then I had another video where I'm masturbating. I wake up in bed and it's like Thanksgiving, and I'm like, oh my God, it's Thanksgiving. You know what that means? And then it hard cuts to me, like just a wide shot above my bed. I'm naked jerking off. There's just a black bar over my dick. And I'm just like, just saying anything that has to do with Thanksgiving, like, oh, oh, family arguments, oh, cranberries, oh, dry turkey. Like, and it's like 5 minutes of me just jerking off to fucking Thanksgiving. And that's what I sent Comedy Central. And they're just like, fuck, okay. They're like, this guy's fucking psycho, but all right. that's all I had on tape.
Did you do one about you dreaming or something?
Maybe.
I think I saw one a long time ago of you doing, like, you something about something in a dream. I forget. You were sleeping. I don't know. I can't remember.
Maybe.
I'll find it because I remember. But I think I saw that one. So then you go and you do Sarah's show, and then that's got to fucking. Does it? What's the feeling? Because I remember being at Comedy Central for a meeting, and I remember they were like, if this pitch has anything to do with convincing Sarah to go back to work, we'd love to hear it. And I was like, I didn't even know. I was like, I love that show. And they're like, yeah, we're trying to get everything back together. And then all of a sudden they pulled the plug.
Yeah, they right? fucking canceled it.
Yeah. And I was like,
it was an expensive show.
Was it really?
That's not Comedy Central's thing. They don't like expensive.
Yeah.
That's why they do like The Daily Show and shows that are very inexpensive to make.
Now, did it stink when that disappeared? Were you just like, fuck?
It was kind of depressing. By the end of the third season, we all kind of had an idea that it was going to end.
Like, really?
We didn't know we were shooting the last episodes when we were doing the third season, but we kind of had an idea. In fact, when they started writing them, the writers all felt like this is probably going to be the last season. So they just wrote huge episodes, like outrageous, like crazy. I love the third season. It's just crazy shit, you know? Me and Brian having a robot baby that, like, we bring to life by praying to the devil, and it's like killing people and just crazy shit like that. We went nuts with the third season. So when they pulled the plug, we weren't really surprised. Yeah. It was kind of a bummer, but yeah, I mean, it was great for me. It got me agents and it got me more work. So it was, I hit the jackpot. Sarah, I would not have a career if it wasn't for her.
She's every time I see her, I feel like I have the need to reintroduce myself because I don't think she'd ever remember me.
I don't know about that.
I feel
that way too about everybody. I'm always like Steve, we met. Like, yeah,
I do that all the time. I never would assume someone would know my name, and yeah. To the point where I do that to the door guys at the store every time I go there. I go, hey, oh, I'm Bert.
Anytime I'm the store is the worst for me because I do it so little that like. I'll go and the first thing that I say as I'm walking up to the door is like, I'm doing a Red Band show.
Yeah.
And then I'm usually like, yeah, we know.
Yeah. You're on one of the biggest shows on Comedy Central.
And I also have a problem with faces where I'm like, I think I know this person, but I'm not sure. So I'm always like, yeah, I'm Steve. And they're like, yeah, we've met, you know, I have just, maybe it's just a low self-opinion of myself where I feel like I'm forgettable and like, so I'm always feeling the need to reintroduce myself to people. You know what I mean?
I look at your career and I go, as soon as that Sarah Silverman thing happened, I was like, oh my God, he's working every single day.
I wish. That was the best gig. That was really the only steady acting gig I've had.
But I feel like everyone would plug you into writing and I feel like you'd probably be able to direct something. And like, I don't know.
I'd never want to direct.
It's so funny the way you perceive someone via like social media.
Yeah,
because like you did those vines that were on Vine Street. Was that
It was the Hollywood Minute, or where I would interview people.
Yeah,
and it would just end abruptly because it was a 6 second. I loved Vine, but then it got to that same Snapchat level where I'm like, oh, there are people making thousands of dollars from getting paid to Vine who are just terrible. And I mean, some of them are funny. I know some of them who are funny, but like there were just so many.
Jason Nash is funny.
Yeah. There were so many people that were getting rich off it. And I was just like, not, I was not. And so I was like, I mean, maybe part of it was jealousy. Like, fuck, why are these people buying houses? And I'm still living in a studio. And I also just got sick of, yeah, 6 seconds. Fuck that.
Do you find yourself turning down stuff, though? Like, is there...
Not really.
Really?
Yeah.
See, like, because I always feel like, do you feel like that you get the moniker of almost artsy art, where people wouldn't go to you with, like, hey, we're doing a burger eating show that travels around the world. Would you want to eat burgers?
No. I get stuff like that comes to me, and I'm always like, yeah. Like, I'm now that I'm in my 40s, like, well into my 40s, I'm like, I'm just constantly thinking about bills and eventually wanting a house. So I'm like, I'm not looking at anything negatively, you know. I mean, some things I'm just like, ugh. But I'm an actor, so I want to, you know, I can act in something that's not great and still do the best that I can.
Yeah.
And pay my bills.
Would you do a show for Travel Channel?
Sure.
What would you want to do? What do you like?
I don't like traveling. That's another reason why I do the road. That's the only thing that comes to mind is like the word travel. And I'm like, I like watching all that, but I'm like, I used to have a horrible fear of flying. I got over it very easily, but.
Whoa, how? Because I have a horrible fear of flying still.
Okay, this is a great one. I was flying to New York. This was like 2010, 2009 or 10. It was during the last season of Sarah's show. I flew to New York to open for Sarah for the New York Comedy Festival at this place called, I think it's called the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Yeah.
And I already hated flying. I had a little bit of a fear of flying, but I was like, whatever, I can do this. Especially I'm getting paid. So I usually when I'm getting paid for something, I will fly. I'm just like, I'll just suck it up.
Yeah.
And so I flew to New York and it was top three worst flights of my life as far as turbulence.
Really?
It was, the plane was just bouncing all over for the full like 5 or 6 hours. And like I was just white knuckling it and I was just fucking terrified to the point where we landed and I got off the plane and I'm like, I have to find another way home. I can't fly. I don't ever want to fly again. That was horrible. And so I was like, I can't rent a car and drive. That's just, I'll crash. I'll fall asleep. And so I was like, oh, I'll take the train. I've never been on a train in my life. And I tried to, you try and justify this shit. So I'm like, it'll be great. It'll be like, you know, Kerouac, seeing the country. And I'll get my own little sleeper car and I'll just write. I have a script I need to work on. I'll write for 3 days. 3 days. And so I did it. I got a train, got into my little cart, got out my laptop. And as we leave whatever, Penn Station or Grand Central Station, whatever it is, 20 minutes into the fucking train ride, I am fucking nauseous because I'm trying to write. I'm trying to write, and I don't realize how much a train just wobbles back and forth.
Yeah.
So I'm getting fucking motion sickness trying to look at my computer. And this is 20 minutes into a 3-day train ride. And so I spend the next 18 hours just looking out the window at the horizon just to keep from getting sick for 18 fucking hours. And we get to Chicago. I get off of the plane, off the train, buy a plane ticket, fly back to LA in horrible turbulence. But it was really eye opening. I was like, this is nothing. This turbulence is nothing.
Yeah.
I will be home in 4 hours. Not too, like, I beat the train home. Like, and yeah. I've never had a problem flying since.
Oh, that's so crazy.
I will take any kind of turbulence over a nauseating train ride.
I love trains. Oof. I love trains.
But you know what I'm talking about? They kind of wobble.
Oh, yeah. They just move. They just shake and shimmy the whole time.
I probably would have been fine if I hadn't been trying to write or read.
I don't get motion sickness. So oh, I don't, like.
I get it bad.
Oh, yeah. So I don't. A train ride for me is not that bad.
It was fucking brutal.
We took a train in Vietnam. And,
shit.
Yeah, and that was, I loved it.
Yeah.
Except they're smaller over there. They're the old communist trains, because that's what they got.
The communist trains.
Like the, it was the same ones they got in Russia. It's the ones that built, the commies built.
Yeah.
So they're tiny. There's no, like, comfort is not, was not their, their
just efficiency, not comfort.
Exactly. So, but yeah, I love trains. I get claustrophobic. I just started getting claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Not on train, not on planes, but in life. I was never claustrophobic.
Wow.
And now I'm starting to notice that I do get claustrophobic. But I had a friend who used to get claustrophobic once he got in the plane, and I was like,
oof.
Oh, that would drive me nuts, but that doesn't happen for me. My thing now is I'm trying to quit. I'm trying to reel back my drinking aggressively to the point where it would be nice that it doesn't dictate me.
Yeah.
I don't want it to, like, and it does. To this point, it does. There are times where I do not control it. I can't control
it. Bert the drinker.
Well, no, it's when I fly.
I can't
control it. I have no control over it whatsoever.
I think that's a common thing with a lot of people. I've been on a lot of flights where, like, morning flights, the person next to me is like, Jack and Coke.
Yep.
I'm like,
I flew from Portland the other day, and I was trying desperately not to drink, and she said, came up to me, she's like, can I get you something before takeoff? And I watched my mouth go double Jack and Coke, or double Jack on the Rocks. She was like, okay. And I was like, great. So then I had it, and I flew the whole flight home with one drink, which is fine.
That's good.
But I leave for Virginia Beach Thursday morning. And I can promise you that all I have to do is a show, that one show that night. I know I can do it pretty in the bag.
Yeah.
So, like, the hard part for me will be, like, when there's nothing on the line, when it doesn't matter, when I'm not coming home to see my kids.
Just a habit.
Like, what will I really slow myself down and go,
Is it for you, is it because it calms you down? Is it just a habit? Go get a fucking coffee every morning, even though I don't always drink it. Just out of fucking habit. I have to do it, or I go crazy if I don't get a coffee.
I had to stop drinking coffee because I was getting anxiety attacks. I was to the point they were bad. Like, my face was going numb, but I think I was imagining it.
Yeah.
Like for me, I get nervous. So I tried to fly to Portland without drinking. So I was doing my special, and I was like, I'm going to stay sober for the week and really work hard.
Yeah.
And not be bloated and fucking big droopy eyes when I get on stage. But on the flight there, I was like, I can't fucking... I literally gave up. And I started crying as we were... Because it's like everything's heightened. I noticed that they're taking a different route than normal. Like, why are we turning left instead
of right?
Why are we going over the Inland Empire? Where the fuck are we going?
Yeah.
And then they're going through clouds and it was bumpy. And I just was like... I found myself tearing up, and I go, why can't I do this? I'm literally crying, going like, this is, I put my sunglasses on. I was like, how do I have no control over this? How do I not, I'm 43. I've done everything scary there is to do, anything in the world. I've done it all.
Yeah.
And I can't control this. And I was like, and I have a show that I'm working on tonight that I'm really focused and I want to do well and I want to make sure it's good and I can figure out what's not good so that I can make it better. And I had three drinks on that flight. And then on the flight back, I was like, all right, I'm fine. It's early morning. I'm going to go. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a coffee.
Yeah.
I've never gotten a coffee at an airport ever. Ever. And I was like, I'll get a coffee and I'll like feel good. I'm going to get a good coffee. I can afford the calories. I would have had cocktails anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a cafe latte.
Yeah.
And so I get a cafe latte and I'm like, good. I'm feeling good. Get on the plane. And then as soon as I sit down, I start feeling panic. And I'm like, stop it. It's in your brain.
Through therapy, found that my issues with flying were, even before the thing with the turbulence, that just put it over the edge for me. I was afraid of flying for a long time. I remember in the 90s, I took a flight from Sacramento to Burbank, which is maybe 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Really short flight. I had one of the worst panic attacks of my life on the plane. I'm sure it wasn't related to flying, but the fact that it happened on a plane... After that, I would associate flying with panic attacks. And so I didn't fly for like 8 years.
Really?
Because I was afraid of having... It's terrible having it on a plane because there's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go.
Nowhere. You're on a fucking tube in the air. And so when I eventually started going to therapy, my therapist helped me figure out that my anxiety with flying was... I have control issues. I get on a plane, I am out of control. I have no control. I don't know what the pilot story is. Maybe he's having a bad... So I have like a million things subconsciously going through my mind. Like, I have no control. If we crash, nothing I can do about it. It's the same reason I'm a bad passenger in a car. Like if I go on a road trip with someone, I'm always like, I'll drive. I don't like sitting in the passenger seat.
Really?
Yeah, I feel completely helpless.
I love sitting in the passenger seat on a car ride.
Oh man,
I can't. I have control issues. Someone told me that it. So I don't know where I heard this, but my panic issues started with one traumatization as a child,
mm-hmm.
where I didn't have control over the situation,
yeah.
where I was put into a helpless situation.
Yeah,
and I can think of like three or four. Like I yeah. can. I were you bullied as a kid?
No, not really.
You're always a big kid, I guess, right?
No, I didn't hit my growth spurt till like freshman year in high school. But I can trace my panic attacks back to the moment it happened. When I was in high school, I got sent to military school. And I went to school where they filmed Taps. I don't know if you saw Taps.
You went to Valley Forge Military.
Yeah, you know it.
My nana lived across the street from that.
Wayne, Pennsylvania.
So you know the track and field area?
Yeah.
When were you in ninth grade? When were you in ninth grade?
Like 80.
It was probably already a development then.
Like 84.
My mom's mom owned all of the property from St. David's, which was across the street,
yeah,
all the way well past Valley Forge.
No shit.
And it was one house. It was one house
oh my
that was
God.
There. And they turned it into a complex of like older people's homes.
Yeah.
And my nana still lives there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I watched the Villanova game last night because of my nana.
Dude, that's where I went to school for 2 years. I got kicked out of high school and I got sent to school there for 2 years.
So keep going. I'm sorry.
And so... oh yeah, panic attacks. One day I was walking down the hallway in the barracks and two of my friends were wrestling, play wrestling, just fucking around. And they fell to the ground and one of the guys hit his head on the corner of the doorway, which was cinder block, split his fucking head wide open. And everything there is like, I mean, it's military, so it's like everything is light green, like lime green. So like just dark red blood just really contrasted that. And I can just, I can still like close my eyes and plain as day see that kid laying there with his eyes rolled back in his head and just a puddle, just like in a movie, a big puddle of blood just forming out of the back of his head. And it was horrible. And I remember going after, you know, the paramedics came and took him to the hospital. He was fine. We went to dinner in the mess hall. And I sat down with my food, and I couldn't swallow. I would take a bite of food, and I couldn't, for some reason, learned much later that that's a form of a panic attack. It's like, for some reason, your body shuts down, and you can't swallow. Like, and that's a fucking involuntary, that's like blinking or breathing. You shouldn't have to think about swallowing, you know what I mean? And so that was my first panic attack. And it was that day. And, you know, looking back later, it was like, that was probably like when I realized like we can all die. Like we're all mortal. I was like 17 years old. And that's when I was like, this is all finite. We're all going to fucking die. And that's when all my panic attacks started.
That's so funny you say can't swallow. It's like the first time, probably not the first time but the first time I got really high. Like when I was probably a sophomore, maybe a junior in high school.
Yeah.
I got really high one time and I couldn't swallow. And I
panicked.
And I was like, how come I can't figure out how to swallow?
That's panic, and it only builds on it. It's like the snake eating its own tail where you're just like, I can't swallow. This is terrifying. And so you just, and then you're terrified. Once it's over, once the panic attack is over, you're then worried about it happening again. That's the fucking horrible. That's the worst part for me about panic attacks is not the actual panic attack, which is bad, but they only last for a few minutes generally. Sometimes they last, you know, longer. Generally, it's over after, like, for me, like 5-10 minutes. As soon as I can get out of wherever I am, it goes away. But, like, then the fucking shit is worrying about having another one.
I had probably my first, maybe the first one I ever had. This is going to sound so obvious, but like I didn't realize what was going on.
Of course, you never do when it first happens.
Our neighbors, the Suarez's, there was a party across the lake from us.
Yeah,
and our neighbors were over, and they said, you know, we should take a boat over and go spy on the party. It's high school kids. I was maybe 10.
Yeah.
And so I was like, ooh, that'd be fun. So we all get in the boat, me, Chris Suarez, and Gilda Suarez, his mom, and my buddy Chris.
Where is this?
In 11, Tampa.
Okay.
So we paddle like real sly. We're having a blast. We're like, oh, shh. So we get up to the bank, and we're like spying on them, and all of a sudden they see us spying on them. They think it's two kids. They start throwing oranges at us. Fucking oranges. They're throwing like fucking baseballs at us,
yeah,
really.
That hurts.
And they start hitting us. And by the way, there's like 100 kids throwing fucking oranges. It's Tampa. There's an orange grove.
Yeah.
They rut one, hits Gilda Suarez in the face, and her face just starts bleeding. And Chris is yelling and crying, my mom, my mom. She's crying. I'm getting pelted by oranges. And I'm like, fuck. We paddle back. And it's bad. It's bad. Like, yeah. The joke is not funny.
It's really bad.
Everyone's worried about Chris's mom and Chris, and because Chris is crying. And I went up to my room. This is like in a movie. I went up to my room and I got my fetal position.
I got in
the fetal position next to my bed and just started crying, going like, the fuck? Like, there's nothing safe in life. Like, there's nothing safe. And I was like,
game over, man.
From that day forward,
yeah.
I had panic attacks. I'd have them at night, but my dad was not sensitive to it.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one time realizing my dad, I realized that my dad would die. Like, I laid in bed, and it was very shortly thereafter, and I was like, fuck, man, what if my dad could die? And I walked into my dad's bedroom, and I was like, Dad, I was 10 years old. I go, Dad, tell me you're not going to die. And he goes, no, buddy, we're all going to die. You're going to die, too.
Oh,
I went,
what
the fuck? And then
man.
I just went to bed. I'm like, I'm going to die? I was like, this is not cool. And then my panic attacks manifested themselves with watching Carson. And I would – I don't know if you ever had like I'm sure everyone's got whatever version. But like almost the blinded panic attack where it seems like everyone's shouting at you.
Yeah.
And like Carson's head looked really small and his body looked big. And he was just screaming at me. And I'd just be laying in bed being like, fucking go away. And no one knew it.
Yeah.
And no one – and then
– I kept mine secret for – fucking decade, man.
I didn't admit to having a panic attack until I was 28. In 28, I was like, I remember saying to the doctor, my wife had dumped me and we had broken up and she was about to take me back and she was like, you need to see like a therapist or something. I think you have a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I went to a therapist and I said to them, he was like, what kind of issues? And I was like, well, I have a fear of flying and this and that. And I was like, sometimes I get in the shower and it's like I can hear the shower yelling at me. He was like, what? I was like, it's like I don't know. You ever have it like where it's like yelling at you and you know, like you feel like gravity could just disappear and you could shoot up into space and like there's nothing finite and there's nothing real or tangible in life. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I was like, I don't know. You ever get on a plane and like I kept describing blinders because I'd get blind like tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And then you couldn't determine what side was up or what side was down. Maybe you could hear the devil or you knew that hell was real. Like, do you ever have that? And he was like, I think you're having panic attacks. And I was like, what's that? And he told me. Then he gave me Xanax and I quickly became addicted to Xanax.
Uh-huh.
And then right around then a buddy of mine had them and he had said that Sarah had them.
Yeah.
And then I started hearing people have them. And then they got easier to deal with. The second I realized other people had them.
Oh, that was for me when I moved to LA. And like I didn't like verbally say anything to anybody until I was like, probably mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
And even then it was just to my girlfriend who I was living with. She didn't know for the longest time. She was always just like, why are we always sitting near the exits in a fucking movie theater or in a restaurant? And
because aren't you afraid someone brings in a bag of gasoline, is going to dump it on us and light us on fire?
Yeah. She had no idea until finally one night I just cracked and I was sobbing and I was telling her all this. And she's like, you're having panic attacks, you know? And
that's the worst.
And then I started, I found the more I would talk about it with people, the better I would feel and the less I would have them. And then the more I started talking about it with my friends in comedy and acting, then I was realizing fucking everyone has it, especially like people in the artistic world. Like I'd mention it to a friend, I'd be like, oh yeah, it's like in this restaurant, and all of a sudden I felt really hot and like I couldn't hear anything anyone was saying, and I just had to leave the restaurant. And as soon as I got outside the restaurant, it all went away. And he's like, yeah, that's a panic attack. I have those like twice a week. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. And then I started just volunteering that information up to everybody I would talk to. I was like, you ever da-da-da-da-da? They're like, yeah, dude, all the time. And I felt so fucking great. It helped me deal with it for a long time. And then it just kind of – then that became not enough. And then I started seeing a therapist. And
would you do a show where you voluntarily put yourself into panic situations?
Yeah, because it doesn't – I'm on medication now, and it doesn't –
what are
really,
you on?
Lexapro.
Does it work?
Yeah, it really stopped the panic attacks for me.
Really?
I mean, I still get anxiety. That's because that's normal.
That's what I get. I get general anxiety these days. Now, not so much. Panic attacks are kind of kept at. I've had a number of panic attacks.
Yeah.
But my what I'm doing at Travel Channel kind of induces them, and yeah. like scuba diving, fucking. I watched a girl die scuba diving.
You did?
Not well. Let me. I'll tell you.
You saw the girl get the bends who eventually died?
No. So we do our training in Fiji. My dive buddy is this girl Callie. She's like my producer. One of my really good friends.
I have a scuba. I'm certified.
Are you really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, let's go scuba diving.
I wanted to be a marine biologist.
Oh, so did my sister.
Yeah.
Do you go scuba diving often?
Because I grew up out here, and my family had a cabin on Catalina. And
are you serious?
I spent every summer as a kid on Catalina, snorkeling. That's where I first scuba dived. And
really?
Then in college, I just got certified. And I went to, you know, like Micronesia and, you know, like Palau and those places. And I haven't done it in I would have to get recertified, I think, because I haven't done it in so long. But I used to love it.
So we did our certification in Fiji. We did pool certification in Denver. And then did our open water certification in Fiji.
Nice.
So the first dive.
That's amazing.
First dive we did was really cool. It was at 50 feet, which isn't that deep.
No, that's about right. Perfect.
I think that's a perfect depth.
I do too.
And quite honestly.
You get down to 100 feet.
Did
you find there's an opposite equivalent of a fear of heights with scuba diving, like a fear of depths. Like when you are 130 feet down and look up. It's fucking horrifying.
It's terrifying.
Because then you're like calculating, oh, if I fucking run out of air right now, and you just, it's terrifying.
I wish I had a bit about my first open water dive, like legit, like where I could go down by myself with a group, though, was at 90 feet, which is too deep, and I ran out of air at the bottom. And
really,
I told this to the moth people because I was going to tell a story. The woman was like, they're really good at story. She was like, it's very one note because because you do live, so I know the end.
Yeah.
But it's funny, the joke I make on stage is you ascend at 10 feet a minute. So I was like, watch, this is how quick you ascend. And I walk 10 feet in 1 minute. It's slow as fuck.
It's real slow.
It's so literally, we're buddy sharing going up and then hit an octopus at the thing. The thing that really freaked me out. So we do like our first one at 50 feet, and I had a panic attack descending, and I kicked back up, and then I was like, I'll be fine. And then for me, a lot of it's playing to the camera. And once I play to the camera, I'm a little more relaxed.
Yeah.
I disconnect emotionally.
Yep.
But we do our next one at dusk, the last certification at dusk, and because we're just trying to get it in. We got done shooting. They're like, we have time for a dive. If you want to go?
Yeah.
We do it at dusk. We get down at dark. We get down to 40 feet, and it's me and Callie, and all we have to do is the one where, you know, you're holding each other's BC, and the one person takes their air out and says, I'm out of air,
yep.
And you pull your alternative air source, and you give it to them, and they do. That's all we got to do, and we're done. We're certified. I'm holding on to her. I'm like a foot from her face. So she goes, pulls it out. I'm out of air. I pull my alternate air source out. I give it to her. She forgets to clear it and breathes in water, and we're at 40 feet. There's no quick – there's not – and I look at her. And she, oh, and rips it out and starts reaching for hers, grabs mine. I'm like, huh? And I'm watching her die. I'm like, oh my God, this is what death looks like. This is it. It's really, it doesn't care about your hairstyle. It doesn't care about the face you make. It's sheer panic. Yeah. And then our dive guide, this is why they make those guys. He just fucking John Holmes her and just shoves his alternate into her mouth and just hits the air button, just hammers her. And so it's just air. And she ends up being able to cough out the water and take the air in. And then we all go up to the top, and I was like, holy fuck, I just watched you. I mean, I watched the first act of death.
Yeah.
And it's horrible. And then the next day we went to do that 90-foot dive, and I had a panic attack going down.
Of course.
And I was like, I know what death looks like.
I remember when we did our open water certification, I think we did it in La Jolla. I think it was La Jolla. But like this was a class I took in college, and so they're constantly warn us of all, like, you know, all the fucking horrible shit, like nitrogen narcosis and all that shit. And they're like, you shouldn't drink alcohol, like party like the night before because that's going to like raise your chances of getting, you know, the bends. Cause it's, I don't know the science behind it, but like, you shouldn't really be drinking, you know, cause it thins your blood or whatever. I don't know if that's the reason, but it's something like that. And so the night before we went for our open water certification, like, we all went to a fucking party and got, I mean, like, blackout shit-faced drunk. And we all show up the next day down in La Jolla, and we're all fucking hungover, and we were all so scared to fucking go in the water. And I was like, I don't really want to do this now. There's still alcohol in my fucking blood. It ended up being fine. But one guy had such bad panic attack, he like bit through his mouthpiece, you know, and his air apparatus. Like, he was like 50 feet down and just bit it right off. Like, his jaw was so clenched.
I'd never had a problem with scuba diving, and we used to do it. Growing up in Florida, we would go out to the Bahamas, and we'd just drop a tank at the bottom of the ocean, at like you know, 20 feet, maybe 20 feet, 30 feet, and we just drop a tank, and we go down, and we'd breathe off of it and swim around.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
And then
cool.
Just make sure to exhale on your way up. I think for the most part, I never had a fear of it, and then. I had a panic attack doing our class in Denver just because...
In a pool
at 6 feet. At 6 feet. Because she said, all right, so we're going to go down and we'll go through the class. It's going to be about 20 minutes. And when I got down there, I thought, I can't sit here for 20 minutes. And I literally kicked up to the top. And she came up. She's like, are you okay? I go, I don't know if I can sit on my knees for 20 minutes. Like, I don't know if I can be down here. And she's like, okay. I was like, can I, like, break it up? And like, and I think for me, it was control. It was that you don't.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You're telling me I have to do this for 20 minutes. I don't want to do it. What if I don't want to do it for 20 minutes?
For sure.
It's such a weird fucking.
The brain is the human brain is the fucking worst, dude.
Now, do you get like social anxiety around people?
Yeah, I hate being in public. I hate, like, I went to I'll go to a concert and I will fucking hate being in the audience. I get such, I don't know if it's claustrophobia or just like, you know, fear of crowds. Like, I'm way more comfortable on a stage than in a crowd watching like a show. And I feel socially awkward. Like, I really like fans and stuff like that, but like, when it comes to actually talking to them, I feel just as socially awkward as they do. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell when someone comes up to you to talk to you after a show and they're nervous and they're like, hey, can I get a picture with you? And you put your arm around them and you can feel their fucking heart beating through their back. And you're like, holy shit, calm down.
Yeah.
Like, I get that way too sometimes, though. Like, I'll just, like, there's just way too many people for me to talk to right now. And I'm just as nervous as they are.
I get like that. I get, if I'm sober and I got to do pictures after a show, I start going like, because I'm like, if I was drunk, I'd just be like, does anyone want a picture? And I don't give a fuck. But when I'm sober, I'm like, I realize what I'm saying. Yeah. Would anyone like to take a picture with me? I'm so important.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, oh, I sound fucking horrible. Yeah, I think that I've been medicating with alcohol my whole life And I think just recently I was like, all right, I need to, if I want to live a healthy, happy life.
Yeah, it catches up to you.
Oh, yeah, I think so. What was Janine like?
Oh, Janine was the best, man.
I've had a crush on her since I was literally 22 probably.
Yeah, I'd always had a crush on her, and she was so cool. She came out here to work on 24, and so they were putting her up at a hotel, and she lived in LA for like, you know, 3 months. And I met her early on in that time, and she was at Largo. She came to a show that Sarah was doing, and she, God, it might even have been the old Largo. And she asked, you know, if she could do just like a drop in set. And I just started talking to her, and she was just the nicest person. I only run into her ever now, like at festivals, like I think the last time I saw her was in Portland last year. And
yeah,
she's the coolest.
Yeah, I wish I think in a parallel, I worked with her one time, but it did not go well.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's one of the shows I saw you on the other day was Flophouse.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And one of the reasons I liked that show, and this is gonna sound shitty. I hope it doesn't sound shitty.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I liked that show is because I know that every single one of those kids will cringe at that show in 10 years.
Oh yeah.
Like they will hate the way they represent themselves. But it's part of being young.
Yeah.
And I was that kid. I was one of those kids where it was like, I got it dialed in. I got it figured out. I got my persona.
Yeah.
I'm here to go. All right. This is how I behave.
Yeah.
And for me, it was a lot of like what people call bro comedy, but it was like toothbrush on the balls. That's what I do when I go to a party. Like, it was just fucking horrific.
Yeah. And she's not like that at all.
And I worked with her, and she, like, I was like, ladies and gentlemen, and I give her like a great intro because I'm such a fan of hers. Janine Groffler, she comes up, and I go to give her a handshake. She went, no thanks. And I went, oh, and everyone groaned.
Because of the touching the balls
stuff?
I'm
sure. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't think she was being a jerk. I think she was probably making reference to whatever joke I had mentioned.
I'm sure of it.
Touching myself.
Yeah.
And then she was like, I think I'll pass.
Yeah.
But I had always assumed that she would see me and go, oh, that's the kind of guy I end up falling in love with.
Yeah.
And then we'd end up dating and then being staying friends. Like but I was always drinking Janine that I was like, oh, we'll fucking get along so great.
Yeah.
And then it never.
That's such a bummer when that happens. I remember the first time I met Marc Maron, who I fucking love. And really, I was a huge fan of his in like the 90s and everything. Like when I first was just really seeing.
Man, he can deliver a letdown introduction. Huh?
Dude, remember. Remember in the 90s when like there were so many stand-up TV shows, you know, like the A-List and, you know, Comics Unleashed. There were just so many comic shows.
Yeah.
And so I watched them all religiously. So I knew all these people like Marin and Jake Johansson, Paul Provenza, all those guys.
Yeah.
I was huge fans of all these people. And then you know, I started doing Sarah's show, and I started, you know, getting asked to do comedy shows around town. And someone was doing a show at the Steve Allen Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. It might have been Doug Benson. But whatever it was, there was like a bunch of comedians on the show. And it was me and Doug Benson, Marin, I think, I forget who else. But I'm talking to Doug. There's like a small group of people like backstage or in like one of the corridors somewhere, and Marin's there and Doug and like a couple other people, and we're talking, and then I'm like, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and I'm walking away, and I just hear Marin go, what's that guy's deal? Who's that? You know, total Marin. And that was the first time I met him. He's like, what's that guy's deal?
Oh.
And Doug goes, oh, it's Steve. He's a comedian. He's on Sarah's show. He goes, oh God, and that crushed me. Just hearing him go, oh fuck,
or yeah.
I can't remember the exact thing, but it was something to the effect of, oh fuck that, or oh God damn it,
yeah.
Like this guy's just now a comedian because he's on TV. It was that kind of vibe, and I was just like, now that I know Marin, and like that's just how he is. Like,
oh, you almost feel like you're not you're not a legit comic if you don't have a good Mark Maron treated me like shit the first time I met him story.
Yeah.
First time I met him, I was at the Boston Comedy Club in New York, and I was working the door, and I this goes back, and I hope the kids that do Flophouse don't take that as an insult at all.
Of course
I enjoy the show, and I think it's fun. I think it's a great way to show new comedy,
sure,
as opposed to Premium Blend, which was my option as a kid.
Yeah.
But one of my things was, like, you know, I'd wear baseball hats backwards. But this is like the Fred Durst day.
Yeah.
I mean, I cringe now. Like, I'd wear a Hawaiian shirt and a baseball hat backwards, jeans and flip-flops, and that was my... And I get off stage, and Maron goes, "What the fuck was that?"
Ugh.
And he just lights into me. You're a fucking... They put a bill on it for a reason. It's to block the sun. Now is it... What is this? What? And he just destroyed wearing hats backwards. And it was like... And it was all stuff that you'd hear your father say to you if he saw you with your hat backwards.
Yes.
So insightful, and it murdered. And I sat in the back, and I was like, there's no way I can disguise that he's not talking about me. Like, this isn't – he's not making a joke about Fred Durst. This is about me.
And he used you as a springboard to go into a whole bit.
Destroy. And yeah. I was like, fuck. And then I just hid because I was like, I don't want him to have to walk past me. Because, like, I would work the door, so he would have had to walk past me to leave. God. I hid in the bathroom, and I was like, let him leave, and I won't have to run into him again. And then I became friends with him. Like, I'd see him around, and he'd just say hi. And then next thing you know, hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, man.
Yeah, and then he breaks into you. And then when you do share that one time that you met him, and he says that, he's like, oh, did I do that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't even remember it.
Doesn't even remember it. It's one of the great things, you know, about – I still to this day, there's guys in this business that give you that rough exterior that almost make you fearful of being going to a room because you're afraid you're going to run into them.
Yeah.
But then you know them, get to know them, and they're like the sweetest guys in the world. Rich Voss. Rich Voss was terrifying when I first started.
Yeah.
He is the sweetest fucking guy alive.
You know who I used to be fucking terrified of was Brody Stevens when I first came to LA. Yeah, I would hang out. He's one of the comedians I have an earlier memory of, even before I was doing stand-up a lot. Like, back when I was playing in bands, I used to come to the old Largo on Fairfax. Every Monday night was comedy night at Largo. And that was, like, at the height of Mr. Show. So I would go there to see Bob and David and fucking Greg Barrett and Mary Lynn Rice Cub and Karen Kilgariff and Laura Keitlinger and Sarah and Swartzen. Oh, wow. And it was just like the best fucking time to watch comedy, and especially that alt comedy. And
that was a great
oh my God,
period of comedy.
And I just always remember, like, I would want to go up and talk to them, like, afterwards. I wasn't, like, doing comedy at the time. I was just, like, playing in bands, and I was just, like, hanging outside of the club out on Fairfax, out on the sidewalk. And every now and then I'd be like, I'm going to go up and say something. And then Brody would be there just being really loud, and I was like, that guy scares the shit out of me.
Being Brody.
He was just being Brody. And I just remember going, fuck, that guy scares me.
He was one of the sweet, like, when I started in New York, I would try to do the alt rooms just because you could get up at the alt rooms.
Yep.
Like, you could definitely get up.
Yeah.
And I was ostracized the second I stepped in. Like, well, but you know what? A lot of times you go, well, fuck those people. It was me. It was definitely me.
Yeah.
I would roll in with a fucking joint and a 40 ounce and my notebook.
40.
I would buy a 40 because you could get a 40 as opposed to getting a six pack. I get a 40 at one of the corner stores.
With Colt or Old English?
Old English.
Yeah.
And once again, it's like you're, I don't know if, for me, it was a lot of rituals. Like, I still have rituals.
Yeah.
And I get obsessive compulsive about things. So for me, it was like, I got to wear the same outfit. I got to drink my 40. I got to do, and that's how I do stand up. That's how I do it. And I remember seeing some people that blew me away. Some people that to this day, I'm like, I can't believe they didn't become bigger. And then some people who are so overrated, but I gotta be honest with you, very few overrated people. Like, yeah. I remember enjoying that. The people that were overrated were the people that were playing to their friends. And I was like, I was like, I get that this, I get that your friends find this funny, but I don't.
Yeah.
And I don't think those people still exist. But Brody Stevens was destructive on stage in those rooms, and he was the nicest guy to me.
Yeah.
He was one of the few people that was very, very, very nice to me. But I look back at that, and I'm like, I guess I'm just a regular comic. And I was like, I'll work the door at a club. And then the regular comics didn't like me either. No one fucking liked me. It's been my fucking story of my life is just feeling like an outsider my whole fucking life.
So hard to believe.
Well, no, it's, I think I got some fucking sincere issues. Like, I think I'll write stories in my head about things, like, and I'll just believe them.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I've always felt like an outsider.
Yeah.
Like, I've always felt like,
I think that's normal, though.
You think so?
Yeah, I've always felt like an outsider.
Really?
Yeah. Like, what are some of your rituals?
Oh, don't even get me fucking started. Like
you have to have a, like a Jack and Coke before.
No. So now when I go on stage on the road, I don't really have any rituals per se. When I'm on the road, but like getting ready for my hour, I found myself becoming very obsessive compulsive. And I was like, all right, I need to stop this. Like, for instance, I'll try to think of a good example. But like, the morning, my wife got a bunch of blood work done on me the week of my hour special, which is not a good idea.
Yeah.
Because it got me in my headspace. So I saw anything, like say I reached into the hamper to find socks and I found two matching socks very quickly.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, see, everything's going my way these days.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's flowing in a positive direction. And like I had said to myself, I knew what socks I wanted to wear on stage. I wanted to wear ones that had like four leaf clovers on them.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that I had two pair. I had an orange pair and I had a gray pair. And I couldn't find the gray pair. I didn't know where the gray pair was, but I knew I'd seen the oranges around. And I was like, very quickly, not getting myself into a tizzy, but I knew that the orange pair was around and I wasn't going to lose my shit. Like, see those shoes, those blue shoes out there? I bought maybe 100 pairs of shoes. I probably bought 5 pairs of shoes because I wanted to wear the right shoes on stage, and then I had to break them in and they didn't come in on time. I had to buy like really obsessiveness. You'd never know it. Coffee was a big deal with me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I know it was like almost like dealing with a drug addict. Yeah. I was like, I know that if I have coffee in the morning, then I'll be tweaking by showtime.
Yeah.
And I'll be like uncomfortable. So I'll allow myself a couple sips of coffee in the morning to get myself through the day so I can work out. But when it comes to show, 30 minutes before the show, I want to drink coffee so that I can really feel the buzz of the coffee. And then
yeah.
It was like just the fucking dumbest.
It's like, so weird.
And it was like I couldn't manage it. The big one was that my daughter was in Catalina, and I always give my daughters 4 kisses on the cheek, like obsessive compulsive, 4 kisses on the cheek every fucking day that I'm home, and say I love you, and they say I love you back to me, and I'm good.
Yeah.
And I couldn't give my daughter 4 kisses on the cheek. But I had given them to her before I left for Portland, as I had my younger daughter, so I wouldn't kiss my younger daughter the day of the show, and I wouldn't say I love you to her.
Oh, my God.
I'd already said it to both of them.
That's nuts, dude.
And my wife wanted a kiss before the show, and I said, I can't kiss you. I've already kissed you for the week, and until Georgia gets home, I can't kiss you.
That's amazing.
And my wife's like, and I was like, I said to myself, I want this just to be like a regular road gig, because that would help me get out of the crazy for me. Because if I'm home and I'm waiting to do the show, then it makes me crazy. So I was like, I'm getting a hotel room. I'm just driving down to the hotel room. And sadly enough, the second I got in the hotel room, everything turned off, and it was like doing the road.
Yeah.
But when I was home, I was watching everything build, and my wife's like, can I come? You want me to come back before the show? And I was like, In my head, I started dealing with like not homeostasis is the wrong word, but with the equilibrium that is not being allowing crazy in, but not getting too far off.
Yeah.
But then, and then the first show went fine. And then once the first show went fine, I was like, oh, I don't give a fuck about the second show. And none of it was there for the second show. Like literally in between shows, everyone, agents, everyone in the network, everyone came in between the second shows, between those two shows, and hung out and drank. And then I drank for the second show too, and I was like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
But that first show, man, I was
just
like,
getting started. I'm the same way. I will very often leave to go to a gig way earlier than I have to. Like if I'm doing a set at the Improv, I will sometimes get there like an hour or two before I have to, just so I don't have to sit at home thinking about it. Because once I get there, I just go hang out at the bar or whatever, and I'm fine. And then the other thing I do is write set lists.
Yeah.
I have a real problem with, like, before a show, writing out the set list. Though I have a notebook that is just full of the same exact set list. Like, if somebody found it, they would think I was a fucking serial killer. They'd be like, it's like the all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy from, like, The Shining. It's like, why does he have this so many times? And every now and then it will vary when I try to put in a new joke. But, like, for the most part, it'll just be the same. Fuck. Even if I'm doing, you know, when I go to the punchline, it'll be before every fucking show. I'll sit down and I'll write the same fucking set list just to put myself at ease.
You know what I did? This is, I'll show you on the way out. So we'll go through my house. Are you scared of dogs?
No.
Okay. So I had this set list and I had planned out a way to spend my day so that I wouldn't get crazy. So I was like, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to take my set list that, like, I want to say it's in my notebook, but I'd written on a couple different pieces of paper. Owls are also a big thing for me. So if I see owls, I start getting, like, really excited because I go, oh, I'm going in the right direction.
Cool.
I think I might be fucking crazy. So I said, what I'm going to do is the day of, I will focus myself something artistically to keep my mind distracted.
Cool.
So I bought two stools. And I said, I'm going to just take a paint pen and write my set list artistically on the two stools. And so that I don't have to worry about my set list on a piece of paper, I'll have it written on the stool in paint pen. And then I was like, fuck, I should have something nice for my daughters written on the bottom so that if I get in my head, I can look at that and be grounded. Well, just crazy shit. I spent the day working on these two stools. And then I brought them on stage with me and I used them for each show.
That's awesome.
I used those stools. And then immediately someone wanted to buy the stools. And then everyone was like, are you going to auction these off? And I was like, part of me is like, I think they're more important to me than anyone. Because like that I don't think anyone's going to, in 10 years, somebody's like, wait, who was Bert Kreischer again? But I'll still go, oh, that was the stool guy. I had. So I'll show you them on the way out. But I like, oh, that's, I really.
That's a great idea.
I spent the whole day working on these stools, just writing my set list out the way that I needed it to be. So words would trigger memory, you know, like, so that if I did get lost, which I didn't even look at the stool in the set, but if I did get lost, I could go there and go, oh, I know exactly where I am. That kind of, that's the stuff that I think dials back anxiety for me.
That's so funny. I remember, because I have such a bad memory. I don't know if it's the pot smoking or what, but like I really have a horrible memory. And so like I always have a set list with me, even if I just have to keep it in my pocket. I usually like to keep it on a stool.
Yeah.
A lot of times I don't have to look at it, but if I have to, it's there. It just makes me feel better.
Yeah. And by the way, lately, the last month, I've been taking my whole notebook out with me to make sure that I covered everything. Because I don't want to do my special and not cover all the points I want to hit.
And I remember the first time I did the Comedy Store, I was terrified. I was nervous. And I'm backstage, and I'm writing out a set list like I always do. And someone was walking by, one of the comedians. I don't know who it was. I don't remember who it was. But they just walk by, and over their shoulder, they're like, no set lists at the store. Can't bring a set list out on stage. And I was like...
Says who?
Whoever this fuckhead was. I don't remember who it was. I don't know if they were trying to fuck with me or not. But then I was like instantly in fucking paranoid mode. And I was like, what do I do if I go out? I can't go out there with a set list. And so I got a Sharpie and I fucking wrote it on my shoe.
Oh my God.
I wrote it just keywords so I would remember on my fucking shoe. That's how fucking dependent I am on set lists.
It's the extra oxygen. It's just the thing that I know that if, God forbids, and by the way, it doesn't go wrong. When I do stand up, I never look at my set list. I never look at my notebook. I mean, I'll look at it now and then to try out new shit, but like, it's just to know it's there.
Yeah.
And
I've never given a shit when I see someone on stage with a set list.
I could give two fucks.
Fucking every band in the world has a set list on stage.
When Zach Galifianakis would go to his set list, I'd get excited. And I'd be like, oh, this is going to be good. This is something I haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
I never understood that. You know what it was? It was some fucking bro comic trying to say, oh, and all, we don't do alternative comedy around here.
Yeah.
You can't have your notes with you.
Yeah.
Well, fuck. Who gives a fuck? Just all you have to do is make me laugh. The only thing you're supposed to do is make me laugh. Did you, the night I saw you, did you have a set list?
Oh, yeah.
In your pocket?
On the stool, probably.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Dude, I can't fucking say it enough how fucking goddamn
thanks,
funny you are.
Man. That's awesome.
So this has been like an hour 40. I could literally talk to you all day. I feel like I felt like this. I don't know what podcast I heard you on, but you were talking about anxiety, and I was like, oh, man. It does make you feel better when you talk about it.
It's probably been a million podcasts I've talked about it. There's a really good podcast by this guy, Paul Gilmartin.
I had Paul on my show.
Mental illness happy hour.
I had Paul on my show just so I could do his show, and I just did it to him. Oh, yeah. This is what I got.
Yep.
I think I'm thinking if I live a little healthier, because I noticed that when like I was at my healthiest, I was not as bad with anxiety, like skinniest, like meaning. And I know this sounds silly, but like you see a lot of these. Oh, you know what I wanted to ask you about, but I'll talk. You see a lot of these people on social media who are saying that, you know, just because you're overweight doesn't mean you're unhealthy. And I was like, today, I was like, no, I think that's, I mean, to me, I can't say for like,
I know I'm unhealthy.
Yeah, like for like those, there's a, like a 400 pound woman who like does like pro body issue stuff.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, just because you're overweight doesn't mean you're unhealthy. And I was like, okay, maybe for you. But for me, it's a direct reflection. That's almost like a warning sign. Like when I get fatter, that means I'm not living healthy. And I start feeling, I think it goes right to my brain.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
And I think that's where it ends
it
up.
It affects me. Maybe I shouldn't let it, but it always affects me.
Yeah.
Like I'll see a photo and I'll be like, ugh.
Oh, I wish it didn't. I wish I had the confidence of those people who can be overweight and they're like, I love myself.
Owning it, yeah.
I wish I could own it. Have you been following, I only say this because it's like overwhelmed the internet yesterday. Have you been following Jen Kirkman's catcalling thing?
No. Ooh. I don't even know about this.
She got catcalled in Melbourne. And like, by the way, the wrongest person to catcall. Like, if these guys had known who they were catcalling, holy shit! That's like
just like out on the street somewhere.
Yeah, these four guys like fucking said some comment to her.
Oh my god! Of course, it would be her that they'd do it to.
Almost like, and part of me, like, I love Jen. I would, by the way, nothing ever comes out of my mouth bad about Jen ever.
Yeah,
and I will speak freely about her because I know that I love her.
Yeah,
and she knows that I love her. But like, almost to an extent, I wondered when they catcalled her if she almost got excited, like fucking wrong
here
person,
we go,
motherfuckers.
Bitch. Yeah,
but she went on this like huge like. That's like dropping the N-word to Al Sharpton without realizing who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Like, and she went on this thing on Twitter, like talking about catcalling, and all these women posted their experiences of catcalling. And the reason I was saying is Kelly Oxford, who I don't even know if you know.
Yeah.
Do you know her?
She's the reason, I'm the reason she's on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah. We were both on like MySpace or something, and I was like, hey, you should try Twitter.
Really?
Yeah.
Kelly Oxford was a fucking... She had a joke I loved that I fucking... I remember I was... could tell you what comedy club I was in. I was in Omaha, and I read it. It was... pads are meant for women who like smelling their menstruation.
Ugh.
I love so that.
So gross, yeah.
But she talked about getting catcalled, and I was like, holy shit. I was like, I guarantee... As I was sitting there last night, I was like, I guarantee you... Steve is someone who's never catcalled someone ever in his fucking life.
Oh, never. I don't understand that. I'm like, I really don't understand that mentality of like, hey, baby. Hey, baby. When I lived in New York, I would see that shit all the time in New York. You don't see it as much here. Not that it doesn't happen a lot here, but just because you're in your car more here.
Yeah.
New York, everyone's walking around. So I would just, hey, baby. I'm like, what do you think you're going to get out of saying that shit?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? You talking to me?
Hold on.
Let's slip into this alley and I'll suck your balls. That shit doesn't happen. Does that ever happen to any of those fucking dudes?
I've never I didn't know that catcalling was a real thing. Oh, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was like something that...
Like in cartoons.
Yeah. Oh, ow!
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really know that happened. And then, and I'm being serious. Like, when they said that woman walked around and then did that, I went, I this is going to sound horrible, but it sounds whatever it sounds like. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what Puerto Rican and black guys do in New York. But I don't, like, I didn't know that everyone took that for, I thought that was, like, culturally part of what happened.
Yes.
Like, I didn't know that that was something that felt threatening to people.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, shut up. And then I heard this and I was like, oh, and then I have two daughters. And I started going, fuck, man, like, what, how do you raise little girls to go, because I bet you do feel threatened.
Yeah.
Like, I bet you do get fucking scared.
I get really protective with my girl, my female friends when I'm like out in public with them. Like, I'm friends with a girl who's an actor. I don't want to name drop, so I'm not going to say any names, but we were in...
Tell me who she is.
I'll tell you after. We were in Toronto and...
Eliza Dushku.
No, no. We were in Toronto for the film festival like 5 or 6 years ago. And we're walking down the street, and people would just, like, be yelling at her. And I almost got in so many fucking fights, because I would just, they'd be following us down the side, like, hey, what is it? And I would just turn around, and I go, get the fuck away, motherfucker. I would just lose my shit to the point where I'm like, almost where I'm like, I shouldn't be friends with girls, because it's going to get me in fights.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm so glad that Jen posted that, because I think for a lot of people, myself included, you almost just, because it doesn't happen to you, because it's not in my wheelhouse and it doesn't happen to me, and I don't see it happen to my wife, because if I'm with, and it's also, we're in LA, but in New York, yeah. Like, I literally was like, shit, I didn't realize how fucking... And then I started saying, like, I definitely say hi to people. Is that, like...
No, that's not... Yeah, that's fine.
Like, I definitely go, hey, how you doing today?
I do a walking around the neighborhood if I pass someone who's walking
a
dog. I do
in the grocery store.
Yeah, yeah.
My buddy Tate Fletcher said, hey, tomorrow, take some time and smile at old people and, like, say hi.
Yeah.
And I was like, I did it? And I was like, I watched this old lady light up. Like, how? Because at a certain point age, you feel invisible to society.
I know.
Like, no one's... Like, you don't count anymore.
Horrifying.
It really is. Well, I thank you so much for coming over.
Well, let's do it again anytime.
Let's do it again,
and you come do my podcast.
I would love to. That wasn't you. Someone just tweeted that they haven't done their podcast in a month, but they're doing one. Is that you?
No, it was me.
Yeah,
I was gone for a month, and a new one just launched last night with Mary Lynn Ricegub, who I love.
I love her.
Yeah, I do too.
She did something. This is when I first... The strength of what, and I'll say alternative comedy, but like when I saw the power of what was happening in that scene,
yeah.
It was probably 2001,
yeah.
2000.
Yeah.
I was out in LA. I was watching something. This was when like Zach would do the rip the piece
Annie.
Of the paper, Annie,
yeah.
And then the black women would sing.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, I can't explain it. It was just so
you
great.
You should rent... Zach Galifianakis live at the Purple Onion to whoever's listening to this, because he does it. That is like a good example of like that kind of comedy where he ends it with, you know, well, you should just see it. Zach Galifianakis live at the Purple Onion. It's really
and Mary Lynn Ricegub went on stage, and I did not know who she was. I don't think anyone knew who she was at the time,
uh-huh.
But like she did a character of a spokesmodel. And what it was, I don't even know if this still exists. It does, but now it's just on... Now it would be a character of someone who's on Snapchat, a hot girl on Snapchat, because that's all they do now.
Yeah.
But it was so spot on, and it was so funny, and so insightful, and so brilliant that I literally was like... I wrote her name down, and I never fucking forgot her.
Yeah.
And I remember running into her at the... Flappers,
uh-huh.
And being like, hey, my name's Bert, and I think you're fucking genius. And I was like, and I remember telling her, for the record, I've brought your name up to like 5 club owners. Everyone loved 24. I was like, they would all have you in their club. You could totally do the road, and you could totally make fucking money. And she was like, what? And I remember like, and I'm sure she doesn't remember it this way, and I'm sure it probably didn't happen this way, but I remember saying like, you are fucking hilarious. You're one of the funniest people I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Whatever, any person that could do what you did that night on stage has access to shit no one can imagine. I was like, I'm jealous of how smart you are. And I was like, you should do the road. And I'll be honest with you, I'd say the same thing to you, man. I think there is a ton it sounds silly, but you say a ton of money, but there are ton of people out there that would be blessed in the same way that, like, when you watch a great comic, you wake up Saturday morning or Sunday morning and you remember a thing they said and you laugh, and then you go to lunch with your friends that you hung out with that night and you're like, wait, do you remember when he said this? And you guys all laugh hard as fuck.
Thanks, man.
You have that. You do that, man. And I think it's, I understand that the road is a fucking beast, but I think that you're denying yourself a ton of money. Let's set up a tour
or something together.
I'd go on the fucking road with you in a heartbeat.
Let's go out and do some dates.
Let's get a tour bus and let's get like a bunch of fun people.
Would be cool. I would be so down with that.
Let's do it.
And by the way, Mary Lynn now is doing the road like crazy.
I know.
We talk about it on my podcast how just. And she only just recently started. I was like, I noticed on her Snap, or not Snapchat. That's like saying the N-word. I noticed on her Instagram. Like, she's just always somewhere on the road.
And the crazy thing is, she's super talented. And that's the thing that, you know, you forget is that, like I'm in Des Moines next week. People in Des Moines have a very different life. They aren't going to get the references to, like, the nuances of Silver Lake. They won't get like a barista Silver Lake joke.
Yeah.
So if your act's filled with that, you won't translate.
Yeah.
But like what you talked about, what like that night, that is everything they're going through in life. You just assume that it's different because some of them live on farms.
Yeah.
Or some of them grew up on farms.
We're all dying.
Dude, we're all the fucking same. And you don't have that like exclusive act. You've got an act that is just funny. It's just funny. And that's the key to stand up is like they go, you do like this alternative comic? No, I like comedy. I like really good comedy.
Laughs are laughs.
If you make me laugh, I laugh. Look, there's a lot of fucking bro comics that I go, Jesus Christ, I get it. Like, I totally get it. Like, not everyone lives that life. Like, not everyone runs threesomes and high fives.
I remember being at UCB once. And I was in the green room. I was doing a show. I forget which show it was, but Tom Papa was there in the green room. And I think he's so fucking, like, he's like a fucking joke writer. Like, he's like so funny. And he's one of those people I think of as like a proper comedian, like a club comedian, like just so fucking
funny. He's probably
funny.
Straight up down the line club comic.
Straight, yeah. And I remember seeing him come into the green room and in my head going, what the fuck is he doing here? Like, how are these people going to, like, accept his, like, just straight-up jokes? And then I watched from the audience, and they fucking loved him because fucking funny jokes are funny jokes.
Funny jokes and good, well-written jokes. Doug Benson, I did Doug, the Benson interruption at Nerdist Meltdown. And he was, and I was like, I don't know. They're not going to like my act. Doug's like, no, you're really funny. They will love it.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, I don't know. And he's like, trust me. He's like, dude, it's just comedy fans. That's all it is. It's not. And what it is I think it's us. It's that guy that walks behind you and goes, no set list at the store. And, you know.
It's the comedians that fucking make that, draw fucking lines and make
by the way,
labels. Not
it's the shitty ones.
Yeah.
The shitty alternative comics are the ones that don't want good road comics coming in there and going, like, Tommy Jonigan could work anywhere the fuck he wants, but he's scared to go into some places because he's like, I don't fucking know those guys. They're going to make me feel like shit about myself, which I already believe. And it's those guys that go, that are at the store, that have worked at the store since the day they showed up in Hollywood. They've worked the door. They've worked this fucking box office. They've worked everything. And now they're finally getting spots. And then you show up and you fucking destroy. And they're like, well, fuck, he's a threat to me. It's a whole thing. Is like there was a kid I say he's my age, but his name is Roy Johnson. He's a very talented road guy, but he's a little nuanced into Tampa comedy. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were talking, and he was a whole gusto about him. I'm moving to New York. I'm friends with Norton, DePaulo, Bobby Kelly. They're all going to get me in at the Cellar. And I told him, I said, I promise you they won't.
Yeah.
And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I promise you they won't. Because by getting you in, you are now taking a spot from one of their real friends, like Patrice or Keith Robinson. And so they won't get you in at the Cellar. They're not going to, like, vouch for you. They'll probably go, oh, hey, and they'll say hi to you. But you're someone they know on the road. And until you move in New York and earn your own way into the Cellar.
You have to get yourself in there. Yeah.
They're not going to. And he was like, that's fucking impossible. Move to New York, move back to Tampa fucking 6 months later. And I was like, now he's not even doing stand-up. You just like, this. Yeah. So.
Well, I think you're fucking hilarious too. We should definitely do some dates or something.
Yeah, I'm fucking loaded up for the year. I'm ready to rock and roll. We were talking about doing. I was talking with some people because Duncan Trussell.
Uh-huh.
Duncan right now is doing a 30-day tour with a tour bus up and down the East Coast, and I was like, oh, that shit's possible. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you get like 4 comics that love to have a good time? Love to fucking be in good moods.
I love that kind of shit, too. Like, the comedians of comedy where you can just go see, like, a handful of really funny people as opposed to, like, oh, I like this comedian. He's here for one weekend. And why not see him and, like, 4 of his fucking funny friends in a rock club somewhere?
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do it. All right, guys. You heard it here. We're starting it. Tell us who you want us to tour with, okay? So
I know on my podcast with Mary Lynn, we talk about that. Let's get Mary Lynn to do it.
By the way, you don't even need. We can get Christina Pajinski, Tom Segura, me, you, Mary Lynn, get their baby and fucking bang it out on the road.
Yeah.
I'd do that in a fucking heartbeat.
That'd be fun.
What dates do you have coming up?
When does this come out?
Tomorrow.
Oh, tonight, Wednesday, I'll be at the Meltdown. I'll be doing Kamel and Jonah's show at the Meltdown Theater.
That's
in Hollywood.
Great fucking room.
It's a fun one. It's been like a year since I've done it, so that'll be fun. And then April 13 through the 16th, I'll be at the Punchline in San Francisco with John Doerr, who I think is the best.
That's fantastic. And then, guys, keep your eyes peeled for our tour. I always wanted a tour bus.
God, yeah.
You know, someone told me one time, though, my agent told me, she goes, you know, just for the record, it would be a lot more cost effective if you just Ubered to these places.
Yeah, those things take up a lot of gas. I did a tour with Tig Notaro and Martha Kelly. It was the first time I did any kind of thing on the road, and we booked it all through MySpace.
Oh, is this the one in the backyards?
Yeah, the Crackpot Tour. And we just, for 2 weeks, went up the West Coast through the Pacific Northwest and then down through like Idaho, Utah, Nevada, and Arizona. So for 2 weeks, we just played in people's backyards or living rooms, and we just would put out like a donation bucket. We made no money, but we would always just make enough to pay for gas to get to the next.
Wow, that would
and we just did it all in Tig's Volkswagen Jetta.
By the way, you could do that now and make fucking legit cash.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
So. Yeah.
I saw that. That was back in the MySpace days.
Uh-huh.
I remember watching that going, that would be a fun fucking tour.
I learned a lot. I was terrified because it was my first time like leaving LA and just going to strange places and also just doing it in people's. It really helped me. It helped me a lot because it got me over my fear of like performing for like 3 people.
Yeah.
Because that would happen sometimes. Sometimes people be like, yeah, I got all my friends coming. We're going to do the show in our backyard. And we'd be like, great. We'd show up and be like, 3 people.
Did you guys film any of that?
We would videotape a little bit and we'd do video blogs.
Yeah.
Tig eventually sold it to like Showtime or HBO or one of those channels where she went around with John Doerr and they did a... They did. I think that's the one they aired on like Showtime or whatever it was.
I think I saw the ones from you guys for pictures on MySpace. So I thought that was a badass idea because at the time I was obsessed with Wilco. And I'm still obsessed with Wilco.
I love Wilco.
Yeah. And they did those living room shows.
Yeah.
I tried to get a group of people to get a living room show in my man cave.
Ugh.
I would fucking...
That would be great.
No one...
That shit pops up in L.A. There's a lot of comedians who do those like backyard shows.
Those kids that do Flophouse do that.
By the way, I love doing that Flophouse show, and it was one of my best sets ever, but they didn't put it in the show.
Why not?
Like, if you watch that episode, it just looks like I'm hanging out there, but, like, I did a set.
Why did they put it in?
Lance Bangs was like, hey, you want to do this Flophouse show? And I was like, sure. And I don't know, maybe because I've been doing stand-up for a while, and they wanted to just feature, like, the young kids doing it.
Yeah. I like that show. I've watched, I think there's 6 episodes. I think I've watched all of them.
It's cool.
It is cool. It makes you want to be young again.
It makes me wish, I'd been doing stand-up a little more seriously when I was younger.
Yeah, but you know what, man? There's a bunch of people that all start out, and there's very few people that that are in their 40s doing it.
Keep doing it, yeah.
And then that's like the fucking saving grace. I go, I guess I stuck with something. Like, I've always given up on everything, and the only thing I'm stuck with is stand up.
Yeah.
And I look at all the guys I started with. I mean, out of the people I started with, the people that were working, I mean, like, started with, the only two people that are doing stand up on my first open mic are me and Dimitri Martin.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the only two people.
Guys. Dimitri Martin, by the way, a little fun fact. Probably the only other person I know besides myself who's allergic to chicken.
Are you allergic to chicken?
Yeah. Dimitri and I are both allergic to chicken.
Dimitri's allergic to nuts horribly.
Yeah.
Like,
he's got it way worse than me. He can't even eat eggs. I can eat eggs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he can't eat any kind of chicken product.
Yeah, Dimitri's got a ton of allergies. Like, I remember one time someone threw a nut and it hit him in the forehead and his fucking forehead.
No fucking way. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. And Dimitri is like he couldn't have beer because beer had, he could only have Rolling Rock if he wanted to have beer. He's a bubble boy.
We had a lighting guy. I think it was a lighting guy on the Sarah Silverman show. No one knew this because how would it even come up? He was deathly allergic to peanuts, right? And we did an episode where Sarah starts a band with her father, like a Lisa Loeb cover band, and there's a whole montage of them going to these different places around the country singing this song. That Lisa Loeb song. And one of the sets that they shot on one of the days, like, was like kind of a roadhouse. So they had like the peanut shells.
Oh, on shit. The floor, like, yeah.
Cracked peanuts. And then so this guy walks in, and he walked in like first thing in the morning, saw all the peanuts on the floor, and was like, well, see you guys tomorrow, and just went home. And he was like, I can't even breathe that shit. He's like, I'll fucking die.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that. Dimitri was the first person I ever heard that was allergic to peanuts ever in my life. Yeah. I remember him saying, oh no. Like, well, I remember laughing and going, oh, it's one of his bits.
Yeah.
That was one of my big things when I was younger, is I just thought people were all running bits on me. Everything that I hadn't heard.
Yeah, yeah.
This is how. I'll say it off air. It's so bad. But, like, I was so oblivious and grown up southern sheltered that, like, I mean, I was allergic to peanuts was, like, fucking blew me away.
Yeah. He's also allergic to chicken.
Also, the one thing I'd always want to talk to him about is that, did you ever hear his interview with Marin?
Uh-uh.
I want to say it was, like, all about how difficult he was on his show, that apparently, like, he refused to work with Comedy Central, like, with anything.
Dimitri did?
Yeah, apparently. Hmm. I'm dying to fucking talk to him about that. I haven't seen him in probably like 15 years.
Wow, holy shit.
I mean, like, we started on the same night. We were buddies. Like, I went to his wedding.
Was in Florida?
No, in New York. I started in New York. I did one stand-up in Florida and then moved. And by the way, I was so excited when I found out that Todd Barry was from Florida. I was like, okay, I got a legit grooming.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, everyone's going to go, Todd's from there, and Bert.
Yeah.
And then Tom Rhodes is from Florida.
Yeah.
Jim Brewer, they said, was from Florida, although he was New York. And then Billy Gardell was our Florida. That was every comic from Florida.
That's so funny.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to let you go. It's been 2 hours. Steve.
Not bad.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.